About some things. I'm telling you, it's Mad Monday here on Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Mr. Talk, and I hope everybody had a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And you did what you did, and you enjoyed it while you done it. I know, right? That sounded like so much fun, man. I know. But, man, I'm telling you, other than that, though, I hope everybody enjoyed their weekend and you celebrated whatever you were celebrating. That's all I'm going to say about that. So welcome to the show. We got a lot of stuff a lot of stuff planned for you today. Now, how much we going to get to, I don't know, but y'all know, today we just talk like we talk and we roll like we roll, so either way, we're going to be rocking and rolling today, so I hope everybody is ready to rock and roll with me, because we doing some wonderful things here on Let's Talk. Anyway, so, you know, if you want to be a part of the show today, participate, call in and speak live, or join us in the chat room, where our conversation in the chat room is always off the chain. Here's the ways you can do that. If you want to call in and speak to me, the host, or one of our panelists, or me, myself, just give us a call at 347-838-8622. Press the number 1. I see your hand up on my switchboard, and I'll bring you in so we can talk. Now, if you just want to join in the chat room, you know, and have conversations in there, I get to see those too. Only thing you have to do, just go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Mr. Talk, and you can join us in the chat room, and we can rock and roll there as well, all right? And if that's not good for you, just send me an email, ericletstalk@gmail.com, all one, okay? So I think we basically got all that, the little primary stuff out of the way anyway. Now, let me give my shout-outs to the chat room, because I see my chat room is coming in nicely today. So we got Antoinette, my chat room coordinator in the chat room handling business today. And I want to say welcome, Antoinette. Glad to see you, as always, always. Then we got Deep H2O in the house. Yeah, you know, Mr. Intellectual. That's what we're going to change his name to, y'all. Mr. Intellectual. We got a Mr. International, so let's make him Mr. Intellectual. I know. Hey, but it got a nice ring to it, right?
Right.
Of course, we have the one and only Divine Design in the house. Welcome, How you doing today? How you doing? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't do that man stuff here. But anyway, welcome to Zion. And then we got guests 10-02, 10-06, 10-08, 10-09, and 989. So welcome to the chat room, y'all. Hope y'all ready for a great show, because I know I is. I'm ready for a good show. All right. Man, today we're going to be talking about some stuff, man. We're going to, you know, first we're going to try and get in, you know, because we've been talking about Russia and the Ukraine and all that. But, you know, we're going to play a clip explaining why Ukraine really matters to the United States. And once I play this clip, I'm hoping you understand a little bit better why we are so intent on keeping Russia from taking over Ukraine. All right, we're going to get to that. And then, of course, we have, we're going to do some conversation about being black in America. You know, and I got some clips for you. You know, we've been talking about Al Sharpton. So I'm going to play a clip about Umar Johnson, talking about black traitors. Then I got another one saying black in America. Then I got one on black upper class, you know, and holds what they call a tuxedo ball, where their kids can network with the upper echelon of the black society, you know. And it's an interesting take on that. And then I have another one on do black students do worse on tests. And this was a study done. And it was interesting at the findings. You know, of course, we know what the the results are. We already know that. But to hear it put this way, you'd be like, yeah, it's just crazy. So those are some of the things we're going to talk about. Hopefully we get to talk about all of them. Hopefully you have something you want to talk about also. You know, this is just preliminary, you know, until you come up with something else you want to talk about, then we'll work in whatever we need to work in. All right? So, all that is all that. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Now, you know, as I told y'all last week, you know, the song of the day and the quote of the day, we kind of floating around with that. You know, we won't be doing it every day. Okay? We won't be doing it every day, because I think we started concentrate more on entertaining you than informing, you know, bringing to the front what we need to discuss. But today, I think we got a song of the day for you. We really do. And I went back for a moment and pulled this one up. But I'm sure y'all will really enjoy this. Y'all going to enjoy this one for the old schoolers anyway. But you know what? Even though this song was made 80s, I think it was made in the 80s, yeah, 80s or 90s, it's more prevalent today than it was back then. And it's amazing how that works, how songs that were done years and years ago seems to become more prevalent once you listen to the words in today's society. That's an interesting thing. Maybe that's why they call it music that spanned the decades, right? All right, so you know what? Without further ado, man, we're going to here comes the Nuns. Oh, man, I'm telling you, I'm talking too fast now. Let me slow it down. Here it is, y'all. Self-Destruction.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
bugging. It's one of two suckers, ignorant brothers, trying to rob and steal from one another. You get caught in the mid, so to crush that stereotype, here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you could unite and fight for what's right. Not negative cause, the way we live is positive, we don't kill our relatives.
Pop, 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 one is shot, who's to blame? Headlines, front page, and rap, the name. MC's the light here to state the bottom line. The black on black crime was way before our time.
Sugar Brothers, life. Cause he died a trifling death when he left his very last. warrior behind bars in the worst way. Far from your family, cause you're locked away. Now tell me, do you really think crime pays? And on taking what your brother has?
You little sucker,
you talking all that jazz.
It's time to stand together in a unity. Cause if not, then you're with soon to be self-destroyed, unemployed. C-rap race will be lost without a trace or a clue, but what to do is stop the violence and kick the science down the road that we call eternity, where knowledge is forming. You learn to be self-sufficient, independent. To teach the East is what rap intended, but society wants to invade. So do not walk this path that they laid it.
Self-destruction.
Hey, there was. Woo, stop the violence movement with self-destruction. I know, so I'm looking at some of y'all comments in the chat room, and it's saying, I don't know who that is, man. You know, that was during the time where everybody was getting a lot of artists together and doing anthems, like Michael Jackson, Quincy Jones with We Are the World. But this was the rap version of that. You know, KRS-One, Kool Moe Dee, MC Light. Flavor Flav. You know, all these cats came together to it came together to put out a message. You know, and as I was saying before, that is, you know, even though that song was made back then, it seems like it's even more prevalent in today's society, especially in our black communities, because we are headed for self-destruction. You know, they're not just carrying guns to a club anymore. They're walking around the street with them, you know, using them as games to do whatever they want to. So, yes, we are definitely headed for self-destruction if we don't do anything about it. And thus, hence, that's why we're here. to talk about it and come up with solutions to help us do something about it one way or the other. You know, not saying that everybody's out there sitting on their thumbs or what have you, but we do have individuals that are out there kicking it and trying to make things happen, and that's always a wonderful, wonderful thing. You know, even if just being a mentor, or hell, you know, excuse my language, I'm sorry, or just raising your own child to be a productive human being with respect and you know, helping them understand that education does play a big role in doing what we need to do to survive. Oh, okay, have I gone too far already? I'm just asking, man, have I gone too far already? Because I got a whole lot more going on today, and, man, we gonna talk about it. But what we're going to do right now, we're going to get this commercial out the way, and when we come back, I see somebody has their hand up, we're going to go ahead and bring them in and see what they have to say. All right? So, see y'all on the other side of the commercial. Here it is.
Everybody's gotta straighten out something sometime. I don't care how old you are or how young you are. I don't care if you're married, single, divorced, engaged, or shackled. You gotta straighten out something every now and then.
Are you tired of being rejected for credit, receiving those annoying letters in the mail 10 days later? We can help you straighten out those problems with your credit. It doesn't matter if it's late payment, bankruptcy, collections, and more. At United Credit Education Services, we guarantee to have you straightened out in as little as 45 days. Give us a call at 580-678-8257. Ask for Dorsetta or go to www.myfes.net/ddavis23. That's www.myfes.net/ddavis23.
Honey, honey, honey. All right. I'm telling you, the song alone gets you to listen to the commercial. I'm telling you, man. But, yeah. Hey, you're thinking about a person in a new home, or you just basically want to clean your credit up a little bit. Hey, you know, Dorsetta is the person to call. I'm sure she'd be able to help. No problem. If you want to know more, just inbox me, and I'll give you the information, and we'll hook y'all up, and we can help you get started on the right road, okay? All right. Now, welcome back. Once again, this is Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Mr. Talk. You want to get in on the show today, 347-838-8622. Press 1, and you're talking live. Or you can join our chat room, www.blogtalkradio.com/Mr. Talk. Get in our chat room, man. Conversation is always hot in there also. And if you just want to send me an email, ericletstalk@gmail.com, you want to read on the air, just let me know that, and I'll read it out for you, okay? All right, those are all the ways you can participate in the show, and I'm encouraging everyone to participate in the show, all right? Of course, you know, we have a couple of rules that we got to get out of there, get out first. No use of the N-word, the B-word, no personal attacks, and just act like a freaking adult, okay? That's all I'm saying. You don't act like a freaking adult. You know, I got some things I can deal with you with, and you'll find out. All right? So, and respect everybody else's turn to speak. That's all I'm saying. That's all you got to do. All right? So, with that being said, let's get on with the get on, man. All right. So, before the commercial, I said we had somebody with their hand up. So, let me go on and bring them in, and let's get started. All right. Area code 111, welcome to the show. What you got for me? Who am I speaking with?
It's Happy Monday.
What's going on, Mr. Beasley? How are you?
I'm all right, you know, here on the blade applying my trade, you know. Getting it done. getting it done single-handedly. Me against the world.
Single-handedly?
I get it done. I got a little bit of help, but I mostly do it all on my own. But you know, that song came out 25 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't stop too much.
No, it didn't. It didn't.
And there were other songs.
And, you know, well, you know what, though? It didn't stop too much because, actually, it didn't get much airplay, number one, you know. And people just really didn't pay it any attention. But does that make it any more irrelevant? I mean, because if you take that song right there, as you said, was made 25 years ago, put it on the airwaves today, and it still is the same thing going on. We are headed for self-destruction. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Some segments of us might be headed for self-destruction. You know, I'm trying to maintain and elevate. So, I mean,
okay.
Some may be, but not all of us are on the descent.
Right.
It starts with yourself. You know, in order to if you want to do any type of good and lead and give people a message, that they're probably going to receive you better if they see that your house is in order. But there's another song that came out right around the same time, maybe before, and that was the "We're All in the Same Gang" song, and that came out of Los Angeles. These songs, the message was right in the right place. You don't hear anything like that now on the airwaves or anything else because the whole culture has been corrupted and bought and puts out a message that's it's turned into poison. And what I'm saying that is that I listened to the worst of the hip-hop back then because, you know, first off, I was an adult, but it's amusing and it was funny, but there was a mix. There was all types of different little genres inside the genre. You know, there were De La Souls. They were female rappers. There was Will Smith, the Fresh Prince. They had a whole little different little, you know, that appealed to younger people. But now it just seems like everybody's a gangster. Everybody's hardcore. And those are the songs that you hear. But the problems are bigger than being able to be solved by a record or a group. And, you know, even after these songs came out, see, I'm from Los Angeles. I'm from the home of the gangbang, you know? The literal home from the gangbang. I remember being in elementary school and watching it go down. But not too long after this, we had the riots in Los Angeles, and you had this peace treaty, and the peace treaty held for a certain part of Los Angeles for a while. It's all since fallen apart and it's completely haywire. But even with this message in the music and people trying to adhere to it and think that's the right thing to do, you had the whole situation develop with Tupac and Biggie and this, you know, alleged or so-called East-West conflict. So the type of forces that are at play, that are in motion, are bigger than a song or any program can heal. It means well, but I don't know if you look at it and you get a little bit older, even though you could be optimistic, you have to be kind of cynical. And even you saying, and you mean well, And I can tell from listening to you talk that you would probably participate in something that you felt to do some good, but in the same breath, you say that we're headed for self-destruction. So, I mean, there it is right there.
There it is right there. Well, you know, and like you say, sometimes you have to look at, you know, you have to really look at it realistically, Beasley. And, yes, if we don't get out and do more, we are headed for self-destruction. Now, you know, I understand what you're saying is, you know, basically, well, we said it on the show anyway, you know, you got to have your house straight first before you out there help anyone else. You know, that's the most important thing first, to make sure your foundation is good before you go out there and try and set foundations in anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think me and Sister Ngoni used to get on and talk about this all the time, and that's, you know, is there hope? Is there still any hope? You know, or are we just at that point now to where we can no longer, you know, there's no way we can turn things around?
There's always hope. Even in
there's
the
always hope.
Even in the darkest of situations, there's hope. Even in the darkest situation, there's always hope. Down with dope. Up with hope.
Hey, you ought to patent that saying right there.
Nah, that's when I was in junior high school and the gang stuff was really picking up. And you know, there wasn't too many shootings, but there were big fights and there were some shootings. But they bust. I'm talking about lots and lots of buses, and they filled up the Greek Theater. And Jesse Jackson was speaking. That's what he said. That's not me. That's Jesse Jackson. He was down with dope. That was Jesse Jackson before he evolved in what he became.
Wow. Okay.
Even Jesse Jackson, and he would speak in front of these crowds of people, and then. When the school buses were outside, the ish would start popping off because there'd be people from different neighborhoods and different schools, and they would be out there warring.
Wow.
He just brought everybody together. It didn't stop nothing, and there were good messages. People clapped, and he had lots of rhymes, and it made sense, and it seemed like he was really trying to do some good.
Right.
As soon as they got outside the event, skirmishes start breaking out.
You know, and that's interesting. You know,
if
we're going to go there, I understand. But you know what? If you think about it now, you know, how sure are we that that wasn't something intentional? You understand what I'm saying?
That Jesse Jackson was there to rile people up and bring them together to that. Man, I, as cynical as I could be, I would say back then, and we're talking about 1977,
1978. I'm not saying Jesse himself. What I'm saying is, you know, because back then and still today, you know, the government did have infiltrators into our neighborhoods and our different groups, you know, and... You know, a lot of times when they see things going smooth or things are looking the right way, there's always somewhere, some way they will try and disrupt it. Understand what I'm saying? So back then, just like today, could it be that we had infiltrators into the group that caused it, just the show that, you know, make it seem that there was nothing being accomplished?
You're talking about agent provocateurs.
There you go.
Agent provocateurs exist. However, even taking everything that you said into consideration, in this particular situation, I don't see how it applies. Now, there may have been.
You don't?
Man, these young dudes was just turned up, and it was going to go down regardless. They just happened to put them in the same place. And it's just ironic that you hear this positive message. I think they genuinely.
Okay.
I believe that they genuinely want to do something and stem the growing gang problem. That they really wanted to do something about that. And
who wanted to do something about that?
The school districts.
Oh, okay.
The school districts, the schools. Educators that they're people that really did mean well were. Mm-hmm. I mean,
but
that's
see,
what
I
like. That's what
that.
I'd like to believe. Of course, there's always something rotten in the cotton, but I would say this was mostly something that was coming from people's good intentions. But you know,
well,
maybe
basically. these, you know what, though? I understand what you're saying. I'm sure the school districts or whatever wanted to, you know, have some peace. But, no, I'm talking about higher up the chain. You know what I mean? Because, see, once, yes. And you got to think about it now, they did the same thing with the Black Panthers. Remember?
I know all too well. Yes. The origins of these gangs in Los Angeles and probably Chicago as well, you know, stem from the breakup in COINTELPRO and the Panthers. You know, and leaving all this youth out here with no leadership and no guidance.
Right.
So, and COINTELPRO was, you know, a program that was actively involved in having, you know, they had cultural nationalists like Ron Karanka's
right.
US organization. And they were more of the bougie types, you know, and they believed in that, you know, adopting cultural, African cultural themes and dress and language, that was the way for elevation for Black people. And then you had the Panthers, which gained a lot of popularity, that had a different message. They were about the community and their 10-point plan. So there was active intervention from the government and to separate these groups and put them at each other, and it worked effectively. But some of this stuff is kind of organic too, and it's going to happen by itself anyway, because there were gangs before then.
There were gangs before then.
Watch Bastards of the Party. It tells the story real well. It was an HBO documentary, and it's probably easy to find. It's called Bastards of the Party, and the guy explains it very, very well. But yeah,
all right.
So, of course, there could be some people manipulating things, but I honestly think there was some good intentions there. At least the message was. I mean, the message was: stay in school, don't do drugs, and make your way in the world. Don't fall for killing each other. Well, there wasn't that much killing yet. There were some, but there wasn't that much killing. There was a lot of maiming. There wasn't that many deaths. It doesn't compare in today's numbers at all. There were guns, but there were 22s and 25s, and they put people in wheelchairs
right.
and paralyzed people. Not as many people died. These days, the type of guns they have and the proliferation of them, you know, people end up, you know, dead.
Yeah, so plus, you know, to add to it, you know, everybody wasn't, you know, the media wasn't as into it and you know, want to explore it as they do now. We got somebody else with their hand up, so let me bring them in also. All right, 111, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. What do I have here? What you got for
me? Well, you don't hear my buzz, huh? So maybe something happened. Okay,
no, we don't hear your buzz, Joe.
All right, good. So what's the topic for today? I hear Beasley, but I mean,
okay.
You know, Beasley always deviates from the topic, so I want to find out what the topic is.
No, Beasley doesn't. Don't be coming here trying to start.
Ah,
right
yes.
Now.
Ah,
today is Mad Monday.
But Beasley doesn't
and
come
right
in. Start
we're talking about,
I'm coming in.
We talk about the song Self-Destruction and things like that.
Self-destruction? I don't know.
You
know anything
about that, Joe? Yeah, see, I know. You know, y'all don't have to worry about that kind of stuff up there where you are. But anyway.
Oh, here we go again. All right. I got your fingerprints all over my sheep, and
you're
talking about them. Okay.
Yeah, I know. But you know what, Beasley, that makes a whole lot of sense, and I'm glad you said that because that leads right into some clips I want to play. You know, and the first one is called Black Traitors by Dr. Umar Johnson, and we'll come back and discuss it after the clip gets finished playing. All right? So I'll see y'all on the other side.
Don't want to listen, that don't understand. I'm talking to the so-called the Boule people who think that they better than Black people who don't understand you. How do we deal with them? Because I say off with their goddamn heads. That's what I say. Cut off with their heads like Queen and Dringa. So how do we deal with those people right there?
Okay. Remember, every group in history has had a population of traitors amongst them. Every race has had their traitors. You turn on the news every day in some country, is executing somebody, betraying the ideals of the people. What makes traitors amongst our race so unique, Sister Nikki, so unique is, number one, we have more than any other race. And that speaks directly to our helplessness, hopelessness, and self-hatred. Most black people don't want to be black, and so they willingly join the forces of their oppressor against their own people, because being a part of anything is better than what I am. That's why when you see black police officers, black people who work for the courts, black people who have civil service jobs, whenever you see a black person working for the government, if you notice, they have a special type of an arrogance about them. Not all, but most of them do. If you go into a court and you see there's black people working there, they might be the clerk of the judge, they might be a patrol officer, security officer, police on the street. It could be someone giving you out parking tickets. But black people who work for the government have a special type of an arrogance. Why? Because they are proud that they have been allowed to align themselves with their oppressor. A minute ago, I said there's five characteristics we'll have in common. Let me give these to you. The first one is all oppressed people, okay, like to identify with their oppressor. We have to understand it. All oppressed people like to identify with their oppressor. Now, it sounds like a contradiction, and it is, but you have to understand the nature of oppression makes one want to escape it by what? Any means necessary. And if joining the forces of the oppressed, of the oppressor, helps you escape your oppression, you will do that. So that's number one. All oppressed people like to identify with their oppressors. Number two, oppressed people do not like to accept responsibility for the role that they play in their continued oppression.
Mm-hmm.
Oppressed people do not like to accept responsibility for the role that they play. For example, you hear brothers and sisters point out the white man, the white man, the white man, the white man, as I also do. But then on the flip side of that coin, I'm saying what? We have the exclusive responsibility of solving our own problems, and we have the resources to do it. That's totally different from the Negro who says we are doomed unless the white man changes his policy. We are doomed unless the white man changes his policy. We don't talk about the fact that we just got finished wasting about $50 billion on Christmas gifts. We don't want to talk about the fact we just got finished wasting about $5 billion on Thanksgiving dinner. We don't want to talk about the fact we just got finished wasting about $15 billion in after Christmas sales. We don't want to talk about the fact we just got finished wasting about $8 billion on nightclubs celebrating Christmas and New Year, and not to mention the money we blew on Kwanzaa, so-called Black Christmas. You see, so we don't like to take responsibility. We just want to look at the oppressor. Third, oppressed people tend to look up to members of their group who have been able to join forces with the oppressor. These are very contradictory facts, Sister Nikki, but people have to understand them to understand a black predicament. People will say, well, if I'm being oppressed, why would I look up to somebody in my group who has joined the oppressor and is now being used against me? We have all kinds of examples in our history. Every black person who gets promoted to a privileged position within the white hierarchy is automatically what? Celebrated by oppressed people. Barack Obama, he's celebrated, okay? He's not viewed suspiciously as he should be. Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Condoleezza Rice, Herman Cain, these people are what? Celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we know that they're working with the oppressor, we're still happy that they made it out, which is why I always say, Sister Nikki, we make a big mistake, not you and I, but black people in general make a big mistake in assuming that most black people have a – that's not true. Let me say it again. Most black people do not have a problem with white supremacy. Their problem is with the fact that white supremacy did not give them the opportunity to join forces. We have to be clear about that. So when you go into a conscious meeting, when you go into a community meeting to organize black people, please don't assume that because they showed up, it's because they wanted to exterminate white supremacy. They do not. Most of them will gladly join forces when given the opportunity, and that's why most of your black leaders have turned into traitors the minute they got an opportunity to join the enemy, and Al Sharpton would be the perfect modern example of that. The perfect modern example of that. What else do we know about oppressed people? They are terrified of the oppressor. Scared shitless, Sister Nikki. Scared shitless, big and bad in private settings. But when they are in front of that enemy, like I am in the courtroom or in the schools or in the jail, then there's a whole different rap that they get, which is why you have to study black people to make sure you're not aligning yourself with somebody who's only participating in the conscious movement because there's some sort of personal benefit in it. See, we got to understand something, Sister Nikki. The black struggle, which includes the conscious community, for super teeth that. The black struggle, because you got a lot of black folk who believe they're participating in the struggle on all levels, from academia down to the streets, mid-range struggle. The black struggle has been turned into a business. It is a product to be sold, just like you sell sneakers, earrings, cars, and clothes. We are now selling the conscious movement. Now, I want to distinguish between something. Something wrong with somebody making a profit that they need to live on as a side effect of participating in struggle. So if Brother Umar is making money somehow within this struggle as a side effect and giving something back, that's not conscious capitalism. But if you're making money in the struggle and you're not giving anything back and your primary reason for being in the struggle is to make a dollar, now that's conscious capitalism. And we have to recognize that there's a difference there. But unfortunately, there's so much money to be made in black leadership, so much money to be made on the lecture circuit, so much money to be made in books, DVDs, paraphernalia, food, you name it, that our total struggle has been sold out on all levels by most of us because it's no longer relevant to move us from where we are to where we need to be. It's simply a way and means of doing what? Getting paid. So I might be selling you some sneakers, Sister Nikki, but would I wear those sneakers myself? Do I actually stand behind my sneakers? Probably not. I'm simply trying to get you to buy it. And we have to recognize in the black struggle, which includes the conscious community but is not limited to it, within the black struggle, you have a lot of people who really don't believe in what they talk about, Sister Nikki. They do it because it is a means to a financial end.
Mm-hmm. All right. That was a clip, Dr. Umar Johnson, about black traders. You know, it's very interesting, you know, because we were talking about Al Sharpton last week, in fact, and why is everybody on him lately? And some of us did say, you know, Al been working for the other side for a while. You know, and I guess, you know, I found that and found it interesting because everything that Dr. Umar Johnson said, you can kind of put Al and Jesse in that those categories. So I don't know. And it goes back to what I was trying to explain to Mr. Beasley also about, you know, those inside that keeps chaos going to keep us from coming together as a group. But that's just my opinion, as always. You know, what y'all got to say about it in the chat room? Mr. Beasley, Joe, what y'all got to say about it? Any of y'all there?
I was going to let Joe say something.
Oh, okay. Well, Joe, are you there? Joe may be fixing him a sandwich.
Umar Johnson, huh? as usual, he's spot on. He sees things for the way they are, and he articulates it well across the board. But the problem lies is that the conscious community or a community that wants to be separate somehow from this society, it doesn't offer any alternatives when it comes to a structure to participate in where you can maintain, you know, a standard of living. Not everybody wants to live in a tent in the park and live off the land, you know? You know, when you say Al Sharpton was working for the other side, I mean, there's many that would say that people that joined the military are working for the other side. That you're working for the same, the basic power structure, or even better, that you're a pawn in the game of American imperialism overseas that oppresses poor people and people of color. So, I mean,
well,
we
you
do
know what,
we
usually,
have,
you know,
what?
I'm going to say something real fast. You know what? As far as the military, you'll be surprised that those that are in the military would agree with you. A lot, and a lot of us were aware of that, you know?
So what I'm saying, and just like Dr. Johnson, in the same respects, I'm reading that he was a psychologist. You know he's a blood relative of Frederick Douglass?
No, I wasn't aware of that, really.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a certified school psychologist. So while he's talking about a traitor and the system, he's participating in the system to get his education. And I'm not knocking him for that, but it's not the way our society is set up, and it's not just a thin line, us or them, because people participate or do things and participate because that's just the way our structure is. And if you you can eliminate yourself totally from it, but you'll be out there raggedy as a bowl of sauerkraut. So,
interesting.
But he's right on when he said about how people, you know, black folks can be arrogant if they're the. For instance, I'll give you an example. I had to go to court 20 something years ago for a traffic ticket, right? And I'm going to go fight the ticket. So I get there, I'm sitting in court, and I see a guy that I went to elementary school with and junior high school with. He's the court bailiff.
Mm.
So I said, "Lois, how's it going?" I said, "Yeah, you know, look at you. You didn't join the other side." He said, "That beats being on your side of the table." He said, "Yeah, it beats being an offended in the courtroom." And I'm thinking, "Oh, you clown." So yeah, people do have that arrogance. I've been around them.
You've been around them, huh?
Well, you have too. You
of
have
course
two more
I have.
Than me. You, not only have you been around them, you've been a part of them, involved with them for 20 something years on a daily basis. And I'm sure,
right?
I'm sure you saw your occasional, you know, black lieutenant, black colonel. Even some probably had the equal rank with you that was completely, totally, and 100% bought into the system.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right there, Mr. Beasley.
Right.
I can't even argue with you about that. You're right.
I mean,
I saw my share of it.
Right. I mean, that's probably yeah. most, and that's probably the face that you have to show the world, that you have to show that world, or you just keep your mouth shut. Nobody mm-hmm. wants to hear your derisive, or what do they call it? Derisive. Nobody wants to hear your opinion, your comments. Your job is not to question why. What's your job?
Mm-hmm.
Beavis,
what are you saying, Beavis? You're saying
what
that
am I saying?
Yeah, you're saying that because somebody's part of the military, they're a traitor?
I don't know. I don't know where the hell I said that at. Were you listening to me?
No,
Well, maybe I misinterpreted. Maybe I'm misinterpreting. You're saying Eric
how
knew
long have
people.
You been listening to me? How long have you been listening to
oh,
me
about,
talk?
Last 30 seconds.
All right, so.
Well, here's my question.
You're way out of
all
context.
All right, I'm out
of,
like I said, I may have misinterpreted.
Right.
That's why I'm asking.
All right, yeah, it's way out of context. Basically,
that you're saying that Eric, because he was in the military.
No, why don't you let me say what I'm
okay.
saying real quick, and I'll make it quick. We were basically talking about that you played this tape by this Umar Johnson guy. I don't know if you listened to it.
Yeah, I listened to it, yeah.
And All right. I made some comments on that, and then Mr. Talk made a comment about Al Sharpton playing for the other side, that he seemed to have been playing for the other side. And I just told him how a lot of people can look at people that are involved in the military, black folks in the military, playing for the other side and sponsoring being part of American oppression and imperialism against poor people in color and people of color all over the world.
Oh,
and
is
then
that
we
what
just
said?
Went a little
I
bit further from there.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, that's all. I was just comparing
all right,
it.
Like I said,
and then I was also yeah. what I was also saying is that our society isn't set up that way where you could not participate at all and not be involved with our society all and go live in the damn tent and be raggedy as a bowl of sauerkraut and take showers once a month.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, you find a way to rationalize and fit yourself in the world that fits, you know, that you can f- feel good and feel okay about yourself.
All right. So here's my question. I listened to
this. Tell a certain part of your soul.
Seemed to me that this guy was indicting anybody because he said that people who work for the government, most of them, he probably meant over 90%, were probably traitors to their race because they identified more with the oppressors than they did with the black culture. So my question is, how does he know this? How does he define this? How is it manifested? And if somebody's in the military, I'm not. If you know, I used to be in the military, but I'm not pro-military. I would always recommend stay out of it unless we're not at war with anybody. Stay out of the military because they'll ship your ass overseas. But my question was, how does somebody who is in the military automatically a black traitor? And what is a black traitor? Simply because a person makes more money than somebody else, or they work with white people, that makes them a black traitor? Because I don't know.
I don't know either. And I guess it's the attitude that some take. What he spoke to was people that are, you know, could be a black cop, mm-hmm. could be anybody, a black person with some type of authority like that, that they actually feel they're better and they have a certain arrogance about themselves. You know, cops don't need any college education or anything like that, mm. and all of them take a certain, no matter, regardless of race. But
well, I agree with you on that. So
and I also pointed out that even mm-hmm. though I feel Umar Johnson is spot on, there's some hypocrisy if in his own message, because here it is, he's a doctor that's been educated through this system that worked as a certified school psychologist, so he's part of the program too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So him pushing that message, like there's a black side and there's a white side. There's not. There may be a small black side. There may mm-hmm. be a white side. But what there is a big, huge gray area in the middle, and that's what we call society.
What I picked mm-hmm. up on
in reality,
what you
right.
were saying,
but. See, when it comes in your example with Dr. Johnson, Beasley, I think you have to look at it, you know, sometimes you have to use the other side to get to where you want to be to help your side. You understand what I'm saying? It's like using the enemy, you know, to gain information and knowledge so you go back and help your side correct
and
the deficiencies
yeah.
that's been going on
and, the guy.
And make things better for you. Like the Indians and all of them been doing for years, coming over here getting all that great education, then they go back to their country and make things better for them.
Well, he alluded to that when he said that if you were working, if you were selling, making money, but then giving back, then he approved. My question is, and Beasley just touched on it, was that if you are working for the other side and if you feel superior to your own people, that would be the real syndrome. I don't think just because mm-hmm. you're taking a government job or you're working with white people that automatically makes you a traitor.
No.
But that's the message he is subliminally sending out.
That's
the overall message
out.
That
he's
was sending
out. He's putting it
out
there. He's drawing a line. And you got to realize.
That's the way that I heard it. It seems to me
but
that.
But there's a history.
Seems to me
to
that what he was saying,
there's a history of black people in America that have done things that have harmed the greater good of their people. Most slave revolts were quashed before they even got started because somebody
uh-huh.
ran the master and told.
Okay, but what do you think the major message was, Beasley?
His major message, what you paraphrased it exactly.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get at.
Your major is so perfect, exactly. But it's not without substance. It's not
right.
without substance.
It's just hard to apply
unless you're going to be that down for the cause.
Didn't you qualify? You said that if a person, for example, the cop, if the cop is a cop and feels better than black people because he's a cop, who would now aligns himself with the white power structure, that's a traitor. But the message that this guy is sending
I would have to say for the most part, yes.
Okay, man, and I'm agreeing
with you. I don't
care
for cops, but not necessarily other people with jobs.
Oh, yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
Because he had a job. He was a counselor. Mm-hmm. He was a counselor and a school psychologist. He got his paycheck from people's tax dollars.
And
so
besides,
he's part of the program too.
And besides which, who doesn't get a job, white, black, Chinese, or Hispanic, unless you're going through the power structure, which is white.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
That's the problem in his message.
Yeah,
That's the problem in his.
Because I don't think he properly defined. I'm not disagreeing with him if it's defined the way that you defined it. He defined it, but he didn't emphasize it. He seems to me that his message, because I get the same kind of problem talking with libertarians. You know, I keep telling us, you know what, we've got a power structure up here that is very, very destructive to all Americans, and they say yeah, but then when it comes to doing something about it, what they want to do is, you know, wake people up. Well, if you wake up a drunk, he's just a drunk who's awake. If you wake up a coward, he's just a coward that's well-informed. You got to do more than that. So, you know, you got to define, and this guy, to me, seemed like he was just saying anybody who is working within the ranks of white people is almost automatically a traitor. He said, not all, but most. And he didn't mention which percentage, but I would venture to say he probably thinks 90% to 95%. And I don't know if that's true. I'm just trying to find out. I just don't like messages which aren't specific.
That's not true, but
okay.
You know what he speaks of, there is truth too, of people buying into the system and looking down at their own people and thinking that they're
exactly.
the complete that they're 100% of the cause for their predicament. And like anything else, there's no absolutes.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that.
Anything absolutes. There are systemic problems and issues that keep some black folks here at the bottom, and it's been exacerbated over the past 25 something years.
Well, yeah,
In the same respect, nobody makes you do anything, and you've got to take some personal responsibility yourself, despite the odds, and to fight the flow in the crowd, and not do what everyone else does. So there's no absolutes in this stuff. It's too complex a problem to it's not too complex a problem to describe, but it's sure too complex a problem to solve with, you know,
just one
webinar. Yeah, with you do this and then this will happen. It's just too big.
Right.
Man, that's all. It's too big and it's too complex, and people don't seem to see it that way. They seem to say, well, if the mother stayed with the father, then the children were necessarily better. Not necessarily. I grew up in an era where I grew up in an area with middle class to upper middle class black folks. So there were poor the other ones too, and with mothers and fathers and a strong mother and a strong father, and they still went wayward. So.
Wow.
There's something else I want to talk about, because people have been talking about it in the news, and you've got it up there on your description page, Eric, about a picture of Sharpton. And people are talking... Sharpton.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And people are talking about him being a rat. Well, if he's ratting on the mob, I don't consider that being a rat. I consider that being a public servant.
Yeah, but he did it to save his ass, and that's why he's a rat. He didn't save his ass, and his whole idea that they were out to kill him, I mean, it's a good spin. It's a hell of a spin, but the fact of the matter was he was caught dead bang in the middle of a drug conspiracy, and if you didn't think they had the goods on him and had him good and shook, just like Dr. Johnson said, that these queasing blacks are deathly afraid of the power structure. They had him scared enough to go wear a wire on the mob in East Harlem. Are you out of your mind?
Well, they had to have the goods on him then. But I mean, when you're talking about the power structure, there are a lot of people say I'm not afraid of the government. Well, I happen to be one who is.
You know what? The people that say that, either they're fools or they're ignorant, because you can be put. You can be put
in jail
somewhere with no human contact, no nothing. Who knows what can happen to you? How can you not be afraid and be wary of something so powerful that can wipe you off, that can wipe you off, snatch you, and create a story behind you. What do we know that's true? What do we know that's true?
And we know.
That doesn't have some type of fear of that is a fucking fool. Pardon my language, but they're a fool.
Well, I happen to agree with you. That's what I was about to say.
Any one of us can get. Any one of us can. Let me. I'll be real quick. Any one of us can get snatched up right now. The news story is about coming out about how we were getting ready to commit a terrorist act, and people would just believe it.
Oh yeah. You got another person coming in, right, Eric?
No, I got another clip I want to play.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it falls in line to what we're talking about right now. So for this clip
You know
called,
what?
Huh?
Eric, you know, something's wrong with your show.
What you mean?
It's too peaceful.
Oh, shush. Anyway, that's the way it's supposed to be. But
I'm
going to play this other clip.
Let the Feminazis come in. They'll get it turned up.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let me go ahead and play this clip. I'll see y'all on the other side.
Okay.
This is Black America.
Get it out.
Is Black America.
I'm very aware and conscious of my color in society.
Bertram Lee is a freshman at Haverford College in Haverford, Pennsylvania. Tuition is $38,000 a year. The school boasts four Nobel laureates, and students play croquet on manicured lawns. In a student body of nearly 1,200, there are 98 blacks. Even in this idyllic setting, Lee feels the tensions of race in America.
Sometimes you wear fitted hats. You don't wear it straight like a baseball cap. And they're like, don't be offended. But, you know, are you a thug or a gangster or something? I'm like, what? I look like Carlson Banks.
His grandfather was a prominent judge in Baltimore. His late father, a businessman, co-owned the Denver Nuggets. His mother is a top lobbyist on Capitol Hill. Lee says she instilled in him a love for his race.
Black is beautiful, man. Black is beautiful. People don't say that enough.
Bertram Lee is black and affluent in America. He says that means he straddles two worlds and two sets of expectations. From blacks he hears,
you're rich. You're a rich boy. You don't understand anything about what we go through or what the struggle is.
And from whites,
you're either an affirmative action case or you're here because you're playing a sport.
Dr. Carlotta Miles has known Bertram Lee all his life. She's a renowned psychiatrist in Washington, D.C.
Do you think most Americans have no clue that privileged, wealthy, well-connected black people exist in decent-sized numbers?
We're invisible.
Why?
Because we don't match the stereotype. The stereotype for black Americans is poverty, failure, victimization, and mediocrity.
These are great.
Dr. Miles, a mother of three, emphasizes success in her home with a family hall of fame. The hall is covered with photographs dating back to the 1850s.
That's my dad and his colleagues. These are all doctors. And that's Grandpa Henry. Basically made a fortune before the Civil War. This is my beloved, beloved grandmother. These people all had graduate degrees at the time when most people didn't have a college degree.
Achievements made despite the racism that existed then and now.
This was our 23rd year.
23 years ago, Dr. Miles created the Tuxedo Ball.
Actually, this tells us.
A place for privileged black children to mingle and make professional connections. Bertram Lee believes it will help his future political career.
You could find yourself a job, an internship, opportunity, advice. You're talking to people who generally are amazing at what they do. They're successful. It's so hard to find that, especially like being out in the world.
You have to be black and you have to be wealthy.
You don't have to be wealthy. You just have to be a part of the group.
Affairs like these exclude many, says Darren Walker, a vice president at the Rockefeller Foundation. He spent his career studying race.
Many people in the African-American community react angrily because one part of our community seems quite comfortable adopting the exclusive practices of the majority community that for many years kept us out.
I don't think the tuxedo law should be vilified. It's doing something for the privileged children whom people think don't need anything.
What they see is exclusion. What they see is elitism.
Most of us are tremendously active doing things for needy children as well.
That afternoon before the gala,
there are several black cultures.
A day of seminars.
If I don't believe in myself, how can I convince you to be my girlfriend? How could I convince you to give me a job?
Get your report together.
Leadership comes from.
In a seminar called Pathways to Leadership, Bertram Lee spoke about his elite New England high school.
We'd had many issues with diversity. One of my teachers in my class actually called me a nigger in class.
He said, Ma, there was an incident. One of the teachers used the N-word in the classroom.
Lee's mother, Laura Murphy, was hurt.
The sense of anguish you feel when your child has that hurt sound in his voice, and I was really pleased when he told me that he was going to organize a forum at the headmaster's house.
What's the lesson in that?
Do something. Do you let it in? Do you let them tell you who you are? No.
That evening, the big event. It's a magical night with historic precedent. From W.E.B. Du Bois at the 1910 Midwinter Assembly to Carlotta Buffy Gordon, now known as Dr. Miles. Affluent blacks have been passing on the legacy of success for well over 100 years.
What the Tuxedo Ball reminds me personally is that you cannot settle for mediocrity.
We mobilize our kids to go out and make a difference.
My idea of blackness may not be what society says or what other people say blackness is. I can't help that I was born in the place that I was born in. I can only hope to make the world a better place from that.
All right, that was a video called Black Upper Class. And I thought that was, you know, interesting that, you know, the kid was born into money. Let's put it honestly. He was born into money. Family is from money. And, you know, it's like it's the upper 10% or the upper 1% of the black society, you know, to where they have a ball called the Tuxedo Ball. And they hold it every year, you know, and that's where they let their kids network and carry on and, you know, get into the system, you know, as, you know, and I thought that was very interesting how, you know, it's a yearly thing, but it's something, I guess you have to be in that group to understand it. And she did call it a group, if I'm not mistaken. You know, the lady did call it a group, which means it is specialized and not for everyone. So what do y'all think about that?
You know, it's...
Yeah. Oh, welcome. Let's welcome Michael to the show, y'all. My bad, Michael. But go ahead.
No, I guess they're speaking to, like, the so-called, you know, W.D. Du Bois talented tenth. You know, some don't believe in it, that they're necessarily the talented tens, but there's probably an upper echelon of 10-15% of a legacy of black folks, and they're mostly members of, you know, the Divine Nine Black sororities and fraternities, and they can be an arrogant bunch. They can be an arrogant, dismissive bunch. They're kind of taught that. But in the same respect, I mean, they built something for, and it's all about assimilation, you know, and about helping each other. But it's their whole thing is really all about assimilation and getting ahead. And when there's parts of it that I can knock, but there's also parts of it that I can accept and understand as well. But
you know what I got out of it? The only thing that I get out of that particular clip was the fact that a kid was terribly insulted in class by a teacher calling him the N-word. Other than that, this whole thing about, and going back to the first clip where a girl says that Boule people should have their heads cut off, just because there's an inequality within wage gaps, that because other people who have worked, and see, you don't get to where you are unless you work or unless you're an heiress or an heir to somebody who's rich. If you've gone to college, graduated from college, like all the people who have gone to college and graduated, you have to work. So those people who have worked to attain a certain level, you deserve to feel good about yourself. Doesn't that now, if that person who feels good about themselves is very arrogant towards those who haven't achieved, that's the kind of arrogance that should be slapped around. But just because a person feels good about themselves for having achieved, and the other person doesn't feel good for not achieving, I think a lot of times those people who haven't achieved are projecting onto those who have.
There is that type of arrogance, particularly within the black group. I grew up with it. I've seen it. I was.
You're part of it, weren't you?
A part of it, but I went to public school, so I've seen the other side, too. I didn't go to private schools. Definitely was a part of it. I went to Jack and Jill as a kid.
See? You're part of it.
I went to Jack and Jill as a kid. Jack and Jill is where all of the bougie black folks, kids, and they socialize.
That's what I was saying.
And they socialize, and it starts from there. Then they have, and I didn't participate in it. As I got older, I found other things to do, and I just didn't want to.
Weren't you on the high school football team? And if you went to this Jack and Jill, you were a part of the problem, usually.
I like playing football.
You're part of the football.
But no. This does exist, and there is an arrogance. And I've been around, the kids that would be dismissive if you weren't part of the group, and that you weren't part of their little group. And I've also watched them mix with kids from the hood, and I've watched the way the whole dynamic
would
go down.
That's the way it is in white schools, too. If you're a member of the high school football team, if you're not starting the starting string, you're a nobody.
It's a societal thing, or the girls that happen to be cheerleaders against the girls
happen
that don't
to date
make
the
it.
Quarterback.
Right. Or the ugly people. Yeah, the jocks against the other people. So it exists all over. They're just speaking to the blacks. That's all. So is it really that unique, or is this just the way humans get down? That there's a pecking order. That there's a hierarchy. I think it's just the way humans get down.
That's an interesting point, Beasley. Because some people would say that's just the nature of things. You know, there's going to be a pecking order, as you say.
Right.
You know, and no matter what you try to do to change it, there's always going to be one. So maybe it is that we're beating a dead horse, per se. You know, because no matter what you do, there's still going to be that pecking order where you're going to have the top 10%, then you're going to have the lower 90%. So, wow. You know, just interesting. That's an interesting concept there.
Yeah, well, one thing I've learned mixing in both groups and in the middle, too, is that the so-called lower folks, they can be much more sincere and real. And you can screw around with them fakes if you want to, but fake people really aren't that much fun. At least to me, they're not.
Well, that's true.
And I grasped that real early. Also, you know, I had a mother that taught me to, you know, think about the people that are lower and on the bottom or that didn't have your advantages or, you know, the ugly people, not to be superficial or the fat person
right.
or anything. Maybe that's why I took so much offense to Stanley the other day, you know, or that's maybe why I take offense to a lot of people because they put themselves above another person, whether they're gay or whether they're this or whether they're that. The only problem I have is with dumb people.
Interesting. But I was about to say, when you say when the lower 90% tries to get with the other lower 90%, you know, that's kind of called assimilation. Could you say that? And can you say that's what happened when we so-called integrated with you know, society
well,
became integrated?
Well, I would like to make a comment, Mr. Talk. I've been waiting for a while to get a word in Edgewise. I haven't even responded to it. I'm just trying to, you know, break
okay.
up for you to go to another
okay,
subject.
Okay, Mike, as soon as he asks this question, you can use
let
speak,
him,
okay?
Let him go.
Okay.
I don't know why it has to
okay,
be
okay, well, go ahead, Michael.
Go ahead. Let
go
him
ahead.
Go.
Beasley said you can go ahead.
No.
Go ahead.
Yeah, because, I mean, the word in Edgewise, because you guys have been many topics. I mean, you hit all the topics about different clips. That's why I was trying to get a word in Edgewise. Well, first of all, as an adolescent, I have dealt with direct racism at an all-white school. 97% white? Yes, I've dealt with directly, right? So it's real out here, and this is in the 90s. So I was a direct attack on racism. So this shit is real out here. But when you guys are saying this, this is why we're people in the struggle. This is why we have to say there's the difference between a reason and an excuse why people are in the conditions the way they are because people have mentalities. This talented 10, that shit is cold and crazy and divides people. Listen, when these people, quote-unquote, some of them don't identify that themselves as being black. When they get this token type of money, they are delusional. They are delusional. Now, when they get this money, they say they high-sedity and high-sedity. They're no better than nobody else because they do their dirt in a different type of way. They ain't no better. Really, they ain't no better than nobody in the fucking hood. If you talk about otherness, watch how they treat their children. That's why when they get old, their children keep them in nursing homes and let them rot because they raise them in a totally dysfunctional way. Actually, so we have to have some balance there. And just like Oprah Winfrey, she still got discriminated, and she's a billionaire. Look how Mr. Solution comes. We ask him what's black and white. He considers when black people got money, they don't consider themselves black. And some people don't even consider, like I said again, they don't consider themselves black. So like Beasley said, a real person is a real person, but people have an identity crisis. And I don't have an identity crisis. Some people are struggling. They want to be this and that. They're struggling about being down or being down with their or being who they are or being something that they're not, faking. They don't even know their whole image. So that's all I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm. And you see, you actually, Michael, you made a whole lot of sense on that one. You know, there's not much I can argue with argue with you about on that one, because you made a lot of sense. You really did. You know. let's see. We got somebody else with their hand up.
You said an awful lot with just a couple sentences. Go ahead.
Let me go ahead and bring. I think I know who this is. All right. Welcome to the show, 214. Who is this and what you got for me?
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, great. Okay. Well, you know, I listened to that clip right there. This is JC, of course. All right? I'm back off my vacation.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
You know, everybody has a different level of wealth. Okay? Now, what I heard from those people right there, you know, everybody lives in their own little box. Okay, you may have a certain person, let's say you take someone from the hood, two people from the hood, okay? You take one that went to college. The other one did not go to college, okay? The ones that went to college may hang out with a certain group of people and say, I have made it. I am successful. That word successful, people use it in so many different ways, and I don't even think they know what success is, because some of those people, you know, that do those things, those black tie affairs and all, what do? They say, well,
right,
we're successful, our kids are going to college, so on and so on. Okay, now, how most people, when they say that, they're working for other people in their company, you see. You can measure your success. Why, if I go to college and someone else go to college, they buy a company, do you consider yourself successful when you work for the very same person that went to the very same college that started the company, and then you are working for them? That is not successful. The person that owned the company is successful. Now, you take those people that was on that clip and you put them in an area, let's say, with Bill Gates and people like that, they can't fit in. Everybody has their own little area, and they don't understand that when you get to a certain point, those are the certain people that they hang around with, because they can't hang around with certain groups because they can't fit in, so they have to make their own group to feel special. So they're not going to hang out with anyone from the hood, because they're doing a little black tie thing, and they want the kids to advance and this and the other. That's all well and good, but a lot of times those kids that listen to those type of parents, they're not happy, some of them, and all they're focused on is trying to succeed in this and the other. And it's not always that their life goes great, you know, but it all depends on where you are in your life. You can't say that I'm successful, and that's just where you measure your success. Other people may say, you know what, you're not a billionaire, you're not successful, so I can't hang around you.
Wow. No, I never really thought about it like that, JC. Wow. So basically, what you're saying is, you know, to be really successful, you have to have your own resources and things. Is that basically
exactly
what you're saying?
Exactly,
yeah,
just like
okay.
You, okay? You're heading out, you're doing your radio, so people come to you to listen to you. Evidently, you got something good going on, okay? When you're trying to, success is controlling something, you know, at least having a majority of control. And as I said, people, they go to certain lengths to make themselves feel good and to fit in. So these certain people on the cliff, they say, okay, we're going to start our own thing because we need to feel good. So therefore, we can't hang out with the people in the hood, and we sure can't compete with Bill Gates. These people, they get these degrees, and that's all they talk about. They want their kids to be successful. But at the same time, if they have all this wealth and this money, okay, if they're not building, let's say, for instance, if they're not a Walmart, they're not, you know, Windows or Macintosh, if they're not owning these companies, making that much money, you know, success is only measured within a person's abilities of how far they want to go.
Huh?
That's true.
I said, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
That's true, but you want to know something?
Internal success.
I
don't find that way, but outward success, the reason why the Gates and the Buffetts and the Zuckerbergs, why they hang around with each other is because they've achieved a certain level in life, the billionaire level. Before Zuckerberg founded Facebook and it actually reached a $1 billion level, he was a nobody. Now that he's a somebody, there are somebodies who know each other through the newspapers. They can call each other up and say, hi, maybe you don't know me, but I am Zuckerberg or I am Buffett.
You do know me. We just haven't met.
Right, we haven't met. But
you
they
know
can
of
do
me.
It. I cannot walk up to Gates' house and knock on the door and say, hi, my name's Joe. I thought I'd like to meet you. No. People's water seeks its own level. And that's just the way it is. The really major problem is of those people who can't accept that other people have reached higher levels, and they think, well, they've reached higher levels, they don't want to associate with us, they're snooty. Well, too freaking bad. Plain and simple. Too freaking bad. Go to college or go found your own business, and then you will be of that particular water level, which will reach up to their water level. Plain and simple.
Now, and that's true, but it depends on the person. See, if let's say, for instance, all you guys went to college, or I decided, you know what, I don't like college. I just don't want to go. I could make my success. My success is my happiness in everything that I do. Okay, I create my own situation. Okay, so if money do not make me happy, my success is doing other things to make other people happy. Okay, that's success right there within itself. So it's not about someone becoming snooty. It's just that's just how they are. They are living in their own little world.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I'm agreeing with you on that. You know, like I say, everybody has their own different ways of trying to fit in or trying to make themselves feel better. Of course, those people are going to feel better because, hey, they're not living in the ghetto. Some people in the ghetto, they just like the life is excitement. You put them in something like that, they'd be like, man, this is too boring. You know, I'm going back to the hood.
Wow. Michael, you got anything you want to add?
Oh. Who, me?
It's not. No, I said Michael.
Oh. Well, that's the whole thing.
Michael, okay.
Inner success is inner success. If you feel successful being the person that you are and you can ignore other people who are supposedly above you, then that's a great thing. But if you can't, that's on you. That's not on the people who've achieved higher than you.
You know what? I feel successful because I'm independent. Do I have people that I do business with that have way more than me and do much bigger volume? Yep. But I'm still independent of principle.
But see, that is what JC was saying. You control what you do. You know,
absolutely.
You're not dependent on anyone else.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. That's a lie. That's a lie. Well, first of all, let's talk about success.
How is it a lie?
Because it's a fallacy. Listen, because I'm gonna prove it to you. Watch. When we talk about successful. When someone can, only a person can define their own success, right? If someone asks me, are you successful, and I says yes, and I give them the reason, they can't say, oh, no, you're not, right? So everybody can find their own success. But factually, in order to be successful, you're going to need others to help you to be successful. That is a fact. If I'm successful, I guarantee as a business owner, I'm guarantee I did not build that business by myself. I had employees working with me. I had to get
I have no
feedback.
Employees. I built everything by myself.
No, you don't.
I have
no.
I have. I hire
Where's
people
your inventory
from time
coming
to
from?
Time. Pardon me.
Right. Exactly. Right. So you. Right.
From time,
and you getting
from
your
time,
inventory.
From time to time.
Where are you getting your inventory? Who has the telephone?
He's a
company?
Salesman.
Someone made
the
telephone company. Exactly. But still, he needs help.
Well, that's
true.
They're not helping me as much as they're doing business with me.
No, you have embedded systems in your sales, I guarantee you. You have other
things. I don't even know what embedded systems are.
Well, listen, listen to me. You're cutting me off, Joe. Embedded systems is your inventory, your file cabinets, all of your equipment to use, your tools to communicate with those people. Other people made those systems so you can have a business. All businesses.
Right. If you
want to
be technical like that, yeah.
Well, no,
it's
a fact.
Technical like that, I mean.
Right.
Because
when I open up a business, I have to reach out. So if I say, how can I have that attitude? I mean, I'm not saying you. I'm just saying me. I'm just saying me because I'm going to need others.
So if you want to look at it that I need the internet and I need the phone lines and I need the people to cut down the trees so when I write on the legal pads
and I need other people to say yes to your product too.
Well, that's,
and that's
the hard
is
part.
And right, but so that's other people helping you be successful, right?
Well, yeah, that's
because
that's,
their decision making going your part.
That's the part that makes me unique. That I have the ability to explain
And
you're just a simple closer, Beasley. I know.
Right, right. But it's no, there's nothing. But Joe, if you even know that term, you know there's nothing simple about being a real closer.
I won't tell you what I used to be, but I know about.
I have no doubt that you could. I have no doubt that you could explain something and that you can close a deal, Joe. Because you can communicate that well.
Listen, in banking, they tell us this.
I used to be a marketing
director.
You're
right about this.
So, yeah, you're right, Bees. I used to be in sales.
Right.
Semi-retired, you know, because I made money. But, yeah, I used to close. I used to make the presentation. I've trained people. Yeah. And I don't believe in the ABCs, by the way.
Excuse me, Joe, I've also broke presentations in front of business.
Can I finish what I was saying?
Well, hold up for a minute. I want to say something. You're right. The only thing that people cannot can help you on, you choose your attitude. That's all I'm saying.
I just
want
to finish something. Beasley, the ABCs always be closing. I don't believe in it. But you're a closer. Me, I'm a presenter. I compel people. Then I close, because the fallacy in sales is that, and the way it's always taught is that, always be closing, always be closing. You do that, you become a high-pressure salesman, and then when you do close, the client cancels. That's all I want to say, Mike. Sorry for interrupting.
The only time that happened to me in banking is because when we do a loan, they have a 72-hour window in disclosure. That only happened to me twice. When I closed the sale,
I gotta go back to the fact you were
called decision period. Okay, hold on, everybody, hold on.
Exactly. What are you talking about? I don't know what I'm talking about. What are you talking about?
Hold on. All right, Mike, I still got that shotgun now.
I mean, somebody's trying to correct me. I mean, somebody's trying to correct my terminology. What's going on?
You're easier than me.
All right. Let me bring Stanley in. Stanley has been waiting patiently, and let's get a fresh view. All right, Mr. Stanley, welcome to the show. What's going on?
Yes, everything's going on well and everything. I'm listening to, I have to say I disagree when you say that that some people can't build things, a business, themselves alone. I'm sorry, yes, you can. What you're doing is you're basically hiring people and paying them money to do something for you. And sometimes you don't even have to pay employees things to construct something. Sometimes it's freelancer and things like that. Like in my business, when I'm doing selling product in Amazon, I'm basically going directly to the manufacturer, paying them money Yeah, I'm going directly to them, paying them money to have a product that I put on my name, and I have to do the inspiration and the ideas. They all have to do that.
But you're using Amazon. What Mike's talking about is the intertwining of everything that we do is dependent upon. It's like when Milton Friedman talked about how do you create a pencil. All the elements that go into manufacturing that pencil, it's the same thing. So you don't need employees, and Beasley doesn't need employees per se, but we all need somebody in order for us to do something for us to achieve our goal. We cannot just walk out of our apartments or our houses and just do everything all around.
Okay, hold on. Wait. Okay. I was trying to figure out where we got on this conversation at, and I just figured it out. All right, look. Basically what JC was saying was, you know, a lot of people if you're really going to be successful, you control everything yourself. Now, I think what happened was we digressed a little bit, and starting with Michael, because Michael went back to the technicalities of things, that you probably do need to do when you're setting up your business or getting started.
You have to be technical, because that's real. That attitude
Michael,
is wrong.
Michael, Michael, you know what? I told you. Yeah, it's wrong. Now, as I was saying,
like the good old days.
As I was saying, you know, it's once you have incorporated, whatever, all the people that you need to do to get your business running, you know, and when it gets to that point to where you basically control everything. Okay, you control who you have doing your marketing. You control what you're bringing in and what you're sending out. You control who you hire, who you fire. see what I'm saying? That is what I think JC was saying when he said most people consider that being successful. Now, Michael, you wants to go to technicality stuff like you always do, but that is not a wrong way of thinking. You know, you think in beginning, what we're talking about is once you have gone through the beginning, the hard work, and you have put your time in, and now you have reached that point to where you are there. You know, you have reached the so-called promised land. See,
what I get.
The other thing, the other part of it is, you know, yes, once you reach there, even though you control everything, there may be some individuals you still may have to network with or what have you. But that is your decision now. You're not dependent on anyone else. You know, you're not dependent on a CEO somewhere to make a decision for you. You can make your own decisions because you are the CEO. And I believe that's basically what JC meant when he made his statement. You know, if I'm wrong, JC, you can come on and correct me, but that's what I got out of it.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, so as far as, but as far as all this other stuff, you know, that's next night. Once you reach the level of success that you want to be at, you know, mainly you controlling all your own resources. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Well, that's true.
You know,
if you're the entrepreneur, well, Stanley came in. I'll shut up. Stanley hasn't even had a chance to talk to
us. No, go ahead.
Okay, let me respond. Hold on, Joe. Let me
all
respond because he said, I don't know what I'm talking about. See, that's why I would really never divulge my real life, what I do with people, because you tell your real life, people twist your words up. I mean, don't twist my words up. I'm speaking the fact. When you're a business owner, you answer to your...
All right, go ahead, Stanley.
No, the thing I truly believe when it comes to business and things like that is, if it's not for the CEO or the person basically having the ideas to basically put it all together, there's no business. Yes, you need employees and you need people to make it work, but many people have all the employees and all the contacts in the world, but will never own a business or do something about it, even though they have all the information. It really is a combination of having the employees, but it's also a combination of doing the right thing that you need to do to put it together. Because I know some people who know a lot of employees, but will never own a business, ever. Will never take the risk, also. Or doesn't have the philosophy, also.
You know, this thing about interdependence, about whether or not you're being controlled by other people, whether or not you're controlling them, employers, employees, etc. Years ago, when I was investing in stocks, I found out the importance and significance of interdependence. One day, three things converged together to ruin a trading day. As a result, I don't trade anymore. The SEC, my brokerage account, and my computer. All in one day could have made me lose $6,000. Okay?
Okay.
But luckily, what happened was that the stock, the ETF, reversed itself. I got myself out of that. But they were the ones, without my control and without my consent, who, in a way, conspired against me to almost make me lose $6,000 freaking dollars. There's no employers, no employees, but there's still interdependence. We all are dependent upon something in order for us to get what we want. Either the
Absolutely.
Internet, the telephone, the roads, the cars, other people. That's all I think Mike was saying. But, you know, Mike, you know, guy. But the thing is that's all I think he was saying.
Well, okay, hold on. Let me bring him in so he can respond.
This is crazy. Listen, Mr. Talk, I think I'm – listen, bro. Listen, I'm me. I can convey my message. And, Joe, that's exactly what I'm saying.
People try
to act funny because when I'm talking, they don't understand. They understand me very well, but they just don't like it. And I'm saying again, as a business owner, I still answer to my employees. I still answer to my customers. I still answer to my products and my stakeholders. If my business do the wrong thing, Well, I'm getting my own inventory. My stakeholders may not have a good relationship to me. No matter, and Mr. Talk, you say I'm at the mountaintop. No, we will always have a void. We will always be striving, especially as a business owner, and it's not cut out for everybody, like Stanley said. And I say again, when you're successful, you're going to need other people. So when, see, when people have this attitude like they did it all by themselves, that's why they're greedy. That's why they don't give a fuck. And but actually, we need help. So everybody can have their own philosophy. That's all I want to say. And thank you, Joe, for speaking for me. Bam.
Yeah, but can I ask you a question?
Don't. Go ahead.
Is he there?
Yeah, he's there. Ask the question.
Okay. I want to ask the question. When you say that that brings people being greedy, okay, let's take the example of Apple. If it wasn't for the person who invented Steve Jobs, we wouldn't have Apple.
No. Hold up. Steve Jobs needs others too, right?
Let me ask you the question. Are you telling me that if we take out Steve Jobs, we still have Apple? Yes or no?
No, we may have another company because guess what? Hold up. Listen to me. Because Steve Jobs stole other people's, the GUI system. He needed other people to help him out, bro. He wasn't smart. He needed other people. He didn't know all programming himself. He needed a good marketer.
I never said he didn't.
He knew how to glue everything together. Exactly. So
he's
he needed
the one
other people, bro.
Go ahead.
They make good products. I don't have Apple everything, and I'm a PC person, not a Mac. But I tell you what, the Apple products that I do have are more consistent, last longer, and everything else compared to HP and Sony and all this other stuff. I'll give them credit for that.
Because you have to understand, as a business owner, what frustrates me is when I hear what you're saying and everything is, you're taking away the geniuses that needed to be to have.
No,
because
but the genius
case, yes,
can
yes,
never
it
be
is,
nothing.
Because it took business genius like Bill Gates. It took his geniuses to know to go get DOS, to go get a program that's not even his, that he didn't even invent, sell it for $50,000-$60,000, and then take that program and go get IBM and tell them sell it for $1 million. That's geniuses. I'm sorry, anybody could have done it, but nobody did. And it takes only a business person who does it.
No, but listen, that business person also, that mind, you going to say the one mind is superior. That one mind also needed help. He needed, sir, I'm in business, because I'm a management, so I'm in business. A leadership, you get feedback from your employees to empower them to increase your business. You're not on the assembly line, brother. We need
I understand. I agree
that,
with you. But,
that genius
you, but your employee has to understand also that
what the fuck is you talking about, man?
I understand what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying. Yes, you need to treat your employee well. This, I truly believe that. But you need to also respect that if it wasn't for you as being the CEO, there wouldn't be jobs and employees. That's the thing that employees have to remember also. It goes both ways.
Okay, bro. Okay, so if both need each other, why are you saying one is more? See, you going to
no,
see,
but because
why
no, you're pushing
so that's
because you're pushing
shit. No, with your attitude, that's why it's unbalanced. Listen, if you fire your former and that's a lot of you and say, "Oh, I'm the genius, I'm the number," that's why it's unbalanced, Stanley. And I'm saying we need to unbalance just a little bit. I'm not saying the CEO don't supposed to make more than entry level, but a little
Michael,
bit more balance.
You know what what's happened? This conversation has turned into the dichotomies within the black community, which I think was Mr. Talk's discussion, into a micro, mini, insignificant point that these two will argue until the end of the show, until overtime. But just an
observation. No, this is not an insignificant point. No, the reason why it's not an insignificant point, because Obama got criticized saying, you didn't build this company. This is politics we're talking. And people have mindsets and mentalities. This is not no mixed point, because people are actually living
the
shit
up. When did it become?
This has nothing to do with what we were talking about.
Right.
Yeah,
this is a good dialogue.
Let me answer this, too. We've already agreed that we all are interdependent upon everybody, nobody, somebody at one time or another. And the Eric Wright and Beasley, why are we still talking about this?
Because it's a conversation.
Because Mike has to be right. You want to argue something that's insignificant down into the end.
He asked me a question, so won't you just sit back and listen and let the host
I've been listening.
Okay, then. Well, come on.
All right, hold on. Wait, I can fix this. All right, I can fix this. Okay. I'm going to play this clip, Why Ukraine Matters to the U.S., and then we're going to come back and talk about that clip. All right? All right. See y'all on the other side.
Well, the first point is Ukraine is not some distant land. It is right in Europe here. We got Ukraine here. And just a reminder, these countries neighboring Europe, they're all NATO allies, Poland, Slovakia, Hungary, Romania. In fact, all these countries in green are NATO countries. And just look at the distances. You know, Kiev to Frankfurt, it's only a couple hours flight. Kiev down to Rome, a couple hours, a little longer to London. This is not some distant land. To have this kind of division, violent division, right in the middle of Europe, causes instability. It's a real worry to all these countries and to the U.S. because we're so close to them. Why does Russia care? Let's look at this next map. We've heard a lot about Sevastopol. This is the Black Navy, the Black Sea Fleet for the Russians. It's their only warm water port. All their ports up here in wintertime, often not accessible. And this one here is so key because it gives them access to the Mediterranean and then out to the Atlantic here. And this is the key national security for interest, really, when it comes to Ukraine and Crimea. And that's why when those 6,000 troops first moved into the Crimea, this is where they went first, right around Sevastopol. And it shows this is a key issue. It's not just for the West, certainly for Russia.
The whole country of Ukraine is pretty divided right now. And I want you to explain to our viewers how that unfolds.
No question. You can see it right here in the map. Here is eastern Ukraine, bordering Russia. These are the percentages of ethnic Russians speaking. Here, 75% speak Russian, ethnic Russian. Here, 75%. Here, all over 50%. Once you get into the western part of Ukraine, bordering, remember these NATO allies here, here, and here. We're looking at only 5% ethnic Russian up here in the western parts of Ukraine, and that is also reflected in the pull between East and West. Many people here fear the pull towards Russia, deep cultural, historic ties, language ties. Many here feel the pull towards the EU and the West, and we've seen that reflected in their elections as well. In 2010, when voters went to the polls, this part of the country voted for the pro-Russian candidate, Viktor Yanukovych. This part of the country voted for the pro-European candidate, Yulia Tymoshenko, who until a week ago was in prison.
All right, that was a clip on why the Ukraine matters to the United States. And if you heard, you know, you have to go and look at the video. But when you look at what? Say what?
Was that Joe Biden?
No, that wasn't Joe Biden. No, that wasn't Joe Biden there. What the hell? I don't know what that is. Somebody lost their little minds, though. I know that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, if you look at the map, you know, it matters because it's close to what the NATO countries and stuff that the United States are supposedly friends with. You know, and if Russia decided they wanted to, you know, decide to make a march, then they're going to take over that whole little peninsula over there. You know, and I think that's why the United States is trying so hard to keep them from advancing anywhere, because it would destabilize that whole area.
Okay.
And that's what I thought. But I'm sure. Huh?
That's their argument, and to me it's a weak-ass argument. Not that it doesn't have some element of truth to it, but the fact is any smart imperialistic nation is going to have tentacles reaching out all across the globe. We do it through NATO, so that in case our so-called friends get invaded, we therefore, by treaty, have to get involved. Bullshit. All we have to do, and this is prior to Obama, but also accelerated by Obama, is the fact if we're practically a continent. We in Canada, we are the continent. We have enough natural resources here in America to be independent from China or from any other country. We don't have to have treaties with countries. You know, the reason why we have treaties with countries is because of that particular book, The Economic Hitman, in which we want to control their politics. So we invade their country economically. It's not because we are the elected police of the world, although Israel wants us to be in order for us to fight their particular wars. If we had our own manufacturing base, our own agricultural base again, if we took advantage of our own natural resources and divested ourselves from the chains that China has on us, we wouldn't even have to worry about what's going on over there. War is inevitable. Communist Russia, like I said, I've been saying for years, just because war came down in Berlin didn't mean that those fucking Russian generals said, let's go have some vodka now. Communism is dead. No. They're
no.
going to expand. They've started the expansion again. But we're accelerating it by having us get involved in their Crimea and their Ukraine situation. Countries that expand, like us, like Russia, like Rome, like the Byzantine Empire, you keep on expanding, you're going to wear yourself out. We have no threats to America. Canada is a friendly nation. Mexico is a doped-up, stupid-ass nation. They can't be any threat, except for the invasion of coming across the border with illegal immigrants. They're doing a good job on that. But other than that, we have no enemies. We're protected by the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean, and I'm sorry, the only two enemies we really do have is China and Russia through ICBMs. They're not going to let them fire because we fire back and destroy everything. So MAD works. All this other bullshit about what the Clinton and Bush and Obama's been promulgating for years is just that bullshit. We have no threats.
So no foreign policy, no World War II. Should the United States give sanctions to, like, similar to South Africa with their apartheid, with that, you know, killing the black? You don't think that a nation can put sanctions on somebody because a country may do an act for a certain group of people?
No, I don't like it. Personally, I don't like it. Because
okay.
it means involvement in other people's bullshit.
Well,
yeah.
Well, like South Africa, we were talking about a black
South
thing.
Africa,
I mean,
Israel, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Lithuania, Latvia, what's the other ones? The Arab Spring started where? What the fucking country was it? And I said it was all a false flag anyway. They said
Syria?
Syria, Libya,
Greece?
No, prior to that, where the Arab Spring started a couple of years ago, the first one.
No, I'm talking about back in the day when we were talking about...
World War II, we shouldn't have...
No, in history, I'm talking about the sanctions in Africa with the apartheid, with Nelson Mandela back then.
No.
Okay. Okay, I disagree.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, I don't like a country, especially the United States, getting involved in other countries, because then our CIA, I'm for. I happen to think the CIA performs great service. I don't think, though, that the CIA should be involved in toppling nations or in going into other countries to try to influence their politics. Okay? The only weapons that are useful against us are nuclear weapons. Two countries have them. India and Pakistan have them, but we shouldn't even have let them have that. Okay?
That's not really true, Joe.
How many other countries besides Israel, India, Pakistan, China, Russia, North Korea have
There's plenty of weapons. 9/11, what happened with 9/11 was an incredible strike, and the reverberations. It doesn't have to be nuclear in order for it to have a huge effect.
Oh, that's true. But the thing
Bin Laden said, what his intentions were, was to wreck the American economy.
Bin Laden didn't do it.
Well,
Bin Laden said he didn't.
Whomever did it, Bin Laden says his intentions. Okay, and even if he didn't do it, what terror is fear. You know, is fear. And down the line. So I mean, and. Down the line, not too long after 9/11, 7 years later, for whatever reasons, the American economy was wrecked and still really hasn't recovered, and
yeah,
they never
recovered.
So as far as a nuclear attack is one thing, but if you want to hit people, hit them where it really hurts. And the quality of life and the decline in our economy has affected just about everyone.
Why is that? That's because of corrupt
politics. Well, there are a variety of reasons why, but there's other types of attack and harm.
Nothing's happened since 2001. That's 13 years.
Joe, you're speaking of a literal attack. The reason why all of these uprisings in the Middle East, the reason why you see people in Spain, the reason why you see people in Greece taking to the streets
It's because of economics. The reason why you see the upheaval, the people in Egypt have been living under a Mubarak, a harsh dictator, for decades. But when it gets hard to eat, when it gets difficult to eat, then you start seeing people in the streets. And that, believe me, that's the problem in the Ukraine as well. It's the economic squeeze. The economic squeeze.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, I am
right, and so I know. So I'm not discounting what you're saying. I'm just putting a different light on it. Is that you acting as though the only way to really harm
a country. I'm talking about
the
United States, Beasley. The rest
I'm
of
talking
the
about the
give
whole world.
About.
I'm talking about the whole world in economics, and that there's more than one way. And you spoke as the economic hitman. That the way to really bring a country to its knees, you don't have to fire a nuclear weapon. You can bring a country and you can bring a people
and
create
change. What was
change
I saying prior
throughout
to that?
Economics.
You're right. And what was I saying prior to that? If we got back to the fact that we had our own manufacturing base, which we don't have anymore, our own agricultural base, if we allowed ourselves to be independent from China, like I said, we would be independent from the world. I'm concerned about America. The rest of the world,
they can go on and do whatever they want to do.
The
powers that be that run America didn't want that, and the powers that be are large multinational corporations.
Well, I agree with you on that.
That have no concern for any sovereignty and well-being of America or Americans. They're interested in turning a profit.
That's the issue.
But
right.
Economics
so
is global,
the issue,
though.
Right,
economics is global, so how can you say the United States was not worrying about what's going on in other countries? Any economy
said,
class
would
tell you
that. I would not be worried. The United States is worried about what's going on.
Because the economic system is global.
Because the United States is under the occupation of corporate forces.
True. Very true.
Of corporate forces, whether it be the people that profit from the military industrial complex, or the people that profit. Yeah, so that's the bigger issue. It isn't the whole government of the United States has been corrupted and co-opted.
Exactly.
And
that's what I was getting.
And it's
right,
even worse.
Are.
Right. And it's even worse
all
now.
All governments
so,
are. What government has not been corrupt in your history books that you read? All of them have been to be.
Everybody, the whole ball of wax.
The whole fucking world.
The whole bubble is corrupt.
Exactly.
The whole bubble is corrupt.
That is a fact.
And you know what? And the bottom line is everybody's for sale. Sometimes the check is just a little bit bigger. So can I blame somebody for wanting to sit this whole damn situation out and live like Joey and James and live out there in the woods and, you know, and hunt bears or whatever the hell they do? No, they got a point, because if you can't figure out a way to navigate it and you don't have any skills except wanting to be a boxer or some dumb shit like that, then, you know, I can see how people get frustrated enough. I can see why somebody would want
to
just go...
Are you making a reference to the British?
Well, no, and then like we were saying earlier, and then guess what? You got to choose a group. If you're not part of the right type of group, and if people don't accept you, then you're gonna be an asshole anyway. So it's tough, like you said.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, you got. Then you had to survive on your wits, and some people just don't have wits. So
And in the future, nothing's gonna help out. A lot of people who are preppers, they have the very, very good intentions, and right now what you're saying makes a lot of sense. But let me tell you something. I just saw some videos the other day. I'm amazed at these almost nanorobots, not really nanorobots, but micro-robots that can fly around autonomously and build structures. They have them
now.
What do we need
construction workers for? Right, exactly.
Yeah, the thing is, the reference to the preppers is that if people who are trying to prepare themselves for the economic collapse are going to stay out in the woods or live in a shelter, no matter how luxurious they fix it up, there'll be drones around there staying there for 24 hours a day looking for your ass.
Listen, they have technology, auto mechanics, where they can build a house with not one man, nails and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They can
build a 3D. Just the other day, a 3-story house was built from a 3D printer.
So why everybody can't have a house again?
Huh?
So why can't everybody have a house if it's just like that?
What are you asking me that for? They just developed this the other day. They just came out with a 3D printer.
No, I'm just saying. So, I mean, so if that's the case, can everyone have a house? No one that's sweating labor, let the machines
do it. That's part of the Zeitgeist movement. The Zeitgeist movement wants everybody to have everything for free. No monetary incentives. Everything is done freely. All the natural resources of the planet are going to be money. Huh?
Right. Let the technology do it. Exactly. And we always going to have Mother Earth resources. Her resources were always there.
We're running out
it's
of
never
them.
Never going to empty.
No,
well,
we're running
guess
out
what?
Of
if we run out of that, we will always come. Technology, we know. Mankind will always progress. If we run out of fossil fuel, we'll come up with... By the time we run out of fossil fuel, we have another technology. Solar power, everything will be good. We can come on. Come on.
Well, let's hope.
So it's not going to run out, bro.
Yeah, it'll be good for those who are alive. But for the for the 6 billion of us, I don't think so. I think transhumanism is alive and well.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, and Michael, you know, even if we do have technology, it'd be up to the highest bidder. You know,
we're gonna have. Yeah, we're gonna have hunger.
You know what? I would like to see the world in 50 years, 75 years.
Not me.
And I mean, who knows what's gonna happen? But I mean, if the name of the game is control, okay? From the powers that be, what's better to control than a robot or
that's
a humanistic
yeah.
type robot that could do the things humans can do? We don't need you. We don't need your opinions. Well, we don't need nothing. We're just going to slap a battery in your pack in your pack and charge you up. And I believe. And you know what? I
and like you said, Beasley, it's going to the highest bidder. You think we're going to have access to that technology?
I got a little toy robot here I got from Sharper Image. It doesn't do much. It can vacuum stuff. He looks like a robot, and he can vacuum all by himself, and he's got some arms. I got a remote control for him. I bought him from the Sharper Image maybe 10, 11 years ago. But as far as the, you know, as far as the other type of robots, look how humans have been replaced. Look, when you call most businesses, you have to navigate through, voice prompts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That's true.
Look now into supermarkets. Most supermarkets have a self-checkout aisle. I shop sometimes at Fresh and Easy. Mm. They've got one person that just helps four different
yep.
registers work,
right.
four different aisles work.
They have that.
So,
yeah,
that's the wave of the future. People are complaining about their service jobs and the wage. What when they don't need it? What type of genius does it take? Well, I'd admit the person at the fast food
technology.
Place. That's taking orders and processing orders at the same time. That's some skills. The person that's there that's getting the order from the drive-thru and then doing all these other things, some skills. But those are basic robot-type jobs.
And they say that the robots are not only going to replace the blue-collar workers, they're replacing the office workers, too, in about 15 years. That's not a long time off. Hopefully,
well,
I'll be
you know,
dead
it's a reason. Look. There's a reason why they're cutting the military. There's a reason why that's because of the robots and the technology they're come up with to take
mm-hmm.
place of live bodies. So, yeah, it's not as far away as most people think. What?
No, I'm sure DARPA's
like
going to come out and say, right now, Japan has robots that actually mimic human motions. You can actually see that little robot dancing, and it's very, very graceful. It actually look. If you put human skin on it, you would not know that it wasn't human, the way that it dances.
Oh.
The thing is that DARPA, I'm sure, you know, you can see some of their revelations on YouTube, but I'm sure that the major stuff they have not revealed to the public. And one day, you're going to see a robot that looks even like out of Terminator. Oh, it's going to be a human-type robot fighting for us out there on the battle.
Can I make one statement, please?
I said it before, and I'm going to say it again. You want to know what the latest stuff going on? Watch the sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
I guarantee you. They use that kind of stuff all the time.
Just like an accountant, a lot of these programs, they're getting out of business, too, because a lot of software, people don't need a personal accountant anymore. They can just use the software, the technology, print all the numbers up, and boom. You don't have to pay a guy anymore. They have software now that you can just buy.
Yeah, well,
you're
right.
And all that type of shit. Mm-hmm. Right, so even in that industry, it's hurting.
Well, everything's going to be geared towards technology. Humans are going to be very easily replaced, and that's the whole goal of transhumanism.
But you need to go to school to learn how to run the computers, though. They're going to need people to learn how to run them, program them.
But you don't need 6 billion people on the planet to do that.
You still need, man will never be separate from the computer.
Look, they have a show on right now called Intelligence, where the guy is the walking computer. Then they got a movie coming out called Transcendent or something like that.
Yeah, it was a bomb.
Well, another computer is implanted in a man's head. So, you know, it's going to be, I think you're going to be given a choice. You know, let them implant or you just got
what law is going to pass that? Who's going to pass that law? And for what reason? Come on now, that's too much now. Who's going to force everyone in the line in the United States in the government forcing everybody in the line to get some implant? Come on, bro. That's kind of everybody go crazy. I mean, y'all go too far with that shit, man. They're not going to get everybody to line up.
Okay.
If your last name from A to Z, you go on Monday at the hospital line. Come on, bro, and get this. Come on now.
Michael, you amazing.
Okay.
Y'all going too far. They not going to make you do that. You're not going to do it, Mr. Tom. We're going to make you do that.
Did you hear of Obamacare?
Yeah. I signed up.
Look.
So now you're going to correlate Obamacare with implants now? If I'm on Obamacare, now I should be worried because they're going to implant me now, Joe? Come on, man. You be like Alex Jones. Get the fuck out of here.
So you're saying every doctor who graduates from school
in the future is going to be in cahoots with that shit? Come on, man. Doctors are political.
Wait, bro. You're doing this again, Michael.
Oh, come on, bro. I know
one
about
fact,
ethics, bro.
And then you jump to another fact.
But you know what? I don't think they have to put a chip in anybody.
No.
And Mr. Talk was in the military for 25 years. You were in the military. Joe was in the military. You guys already might have the chip in you.
No, they don't. No.
You guys already might have the chip in you. And you want to know something? Most people
just
have.
Like
no,
this.
Seriously. Most people
like
have.
Lie. Hold on. Listen, this was a lie. Saw the people in the military. Saw the people is a lie.
Okay. Go ahead, Beasley. Good Lord. Go ahead,
most
Beasley.
Most people through technology carry a cell phone. Most people are walking around with a device.
Tracking device.
Yeah, exactly. not just a tracking device.
No, it is a tracking device.
But it's a hell of a tracking device.
Oh, yeah.
It's a hell of a tracking device. It knows all your contacts, knows the things you text to them, knows that you call them, knows how long you call them, probably digitally records and stores the entire conversation.
Right.
So, I mean, we're already there. So they don't have to put a chip in you because people stand in line and volunteer for it. People will stand in line probably to get the most invasive phone of all that's known to have ties to the government and the NSA.
Of course they will. It's like
I'm
what Huxley...
writing an email right now on Yahoo. Let me just finish this. On Yahoo, I'm writing an email right now here on Yahoo discussing stuff that, you know, that I would probably rather whisper in a person's ear. And I'm putting it out there on Yahoo, knowing damn well it's going to be seen. And read.
Well, Beasley, what does that say?
What does that say?
You don't get it.
You just hope they don't come get you.
Yeah, that's
right. You just hope that you keep. You just hope you keep your nose clean enough.
And it's just like Aldous Huxley
said.
You know, Aldous Huxley in his book, he said that the kind of stuff that they're going to implement against us, people are going to willingly not just accept it, but clamor for it. That's how they get it done. They do it through business instead of through the military. They make it sexy. The people want it. And then the government comes along and in a nationalistic grab, just like they did with the AT&T and with the other telephone companies, they said, give us your technology. Give us your email addresses. Give us your names. And that's how it's done. Facebook and Google.
Okay, so now we know exactly what B is saying. But like I was saying, a lot of things need to be challenged. Like they say, they used to give... Well, and basically, they give soul to Soda Peter so they won't get want to have sex. That's a fucking lie.
Soda Peter?
They don't do no shit like that. That's a fucking lie. Soda Peter, or whatever
actually,
you want to call it, and you know
Michael,
what I mean. That
Michael,
is a fucking
Michael,
lie.
Actually, Michael, actually, they did used to do that.
I'm talking about all that, but I'm of course they used to, but I'm talking about now. People are saying they still did it, and it was true and bald. So
they're doing it
I'm
in
saying.
Iraq. They've been doing it in Afghanistan. They've
oh
been using
goodness,
veterans
geez.
For military experiments.
Oh, you fucking
you don't believe
dumb
that?
Ass motherfucker. What experiment right now? What experiment is being done that is not voluntary?
They're doing medical experiments, chemical experiments.
That is not voluntary. That is forced.
It's not voluntary.
No.
Well, if it's not voluntary, no. Then it is an experiment.
Okay, so the, therefore it's not a conspiracy because it's
therefore
voluntary.
Therefore it's not a conspiracy?
It's science.
Oh, for God,
it's, no, it's just science. Hold up. No, listen to me. Hold on, listen to me. Hey, why are you cutting me? Man, did you want me to call your showman to talk? You muted me 8 times. Listen to me. Hold up. If I volunteer, if a doctor says I want to test an experiment on a...
9 times, Mike. Unreal.
But either way.
I mean, you're trying to put me like a clown. I'm trying to get my thought and my conversation out, and you keep on muting me.
Well, you know how we do this, Michael.
Michael,
no,
why
you
keep coming back? You like it.
No, I'm saying it's biased. Don't make me look like a clown, bro. You're not going to let me. Why? Why?
Wow.
I'm a clown, I'm special. What the fuck? What I'm saying is, it's not a fucking conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy.
Oh, boy.
It's not a conspiracy when a doctor says, I want to do it.
Nobody said it was a conspiracy, Mike. You're the one who brought it up. You brought it up in connection with a statement that had no connection. Okay.
I never said it was a conspiracy.
Beasley didn't say it. Eric didn't say it.
No.
You said, but there's no conspiracy. We didn't say it was a conspiracy.
Listen to me. Beasley made a statement about me and Mr. Talk, and I'm surprised he muted me when I'm trying to defend us. He says that they could shot us something that could have a tracking system on that shit. You can't make no statements like that if that shit not true, bro. Where you getting your information? He says when I got in the army.
It's possible,
make,
Mike. If
it's
you,
possible.
If you don't think it's possible that the military experimented with people that were in the military, then, you know,
I think
you're probably wrong. I don't know for a fact.
Listen to me, okay? There is documented that as far as NK Ultra, yes, they do that. But it was revealed, and far as we know, they may have secret experiments, but the subjects are willing subjects. If the subjects are willing and not brainwashed like the NK Ultra, that's different. If it's willing, it's science. Talk to
yes,
me.
But that's not what
Mike, Have you heard of Jonesboro?
Okay,
have you heard of all the testing? But you're saying that a modern day soldier is
involuntarily getting something in him that they don't know.
It's possible.
Yes,
that's all I'm saying. It's possible.
I'm saying
it's
highly
possible.
I'm saying they're doing it because vets have come back and they've said when they've gone to
normally
the hospital, the nurse, the doctor, they suspect that because they were there for one thing and they come out practically half crazy, that they have been experimented on.
They've given people in the military high doses of LSD just to watch how they would flip out as guinea pigs, and they had no knowledge of it whatsoever.
Okay, do they do that now?
So you're saying they stopped because all the...
I wouldn't put anything past them what they would do.
Now, here's, you know what the real question is, Michael? The real question
is
do we know about it? Not did they stop. Of course they didn't stop.
No, see, now you're talking about that lady who thinks, now you're going to lie.
Yeah, my name is Elvira.
About that lady getting raped by all these men and all that. I'm letting
well, you know what?
Because MK Ultra
sex slaves do exist, Mike. We've already established this, is that we can't tell who's mentally ill and making shit up from the people that have actually been through
stuff. Listen to me.
No, and you're not speaking the facts. There is, listen, the MK Ultra, do your research with MK Ultra. It's only it's a couple of documents, right? An event happened, right?
No.
And you will
it's
find the research.
Go ahead
and
talk.
The women.
I know all about
listen
MK Ultra, but go ahead and talk.
Okay. Now, do you know the senator who stopped the MK Ultra? The senator
no,
who brought
never
up the
stopped,
Congress
Mike. If you understood, if you understand MK Ultra programming, you would know that okay. Operation Paperclip. They brought these Nazi professors and doctors, and they spread all throughout our society. They were in universities, they were in laboratories,
okay.
they were all over the place. And that
okay.
and that was in the and that was in
if
the 40s. That was
person,
the late 40s.
Okay,
Let me finish.
Okay.
The number of people, okay, that know how to use MK Ultra type training, okay, Monarch programming, is probably in the thousands. And you see it in Hollywood, and you see it all over. So if the government stopped it, there's private groups to do it. This is common. This is a. If I were evil enough, I know how to do MK Ultra training with someone.
So even
if the government, and I doubt the government has completely stopped it.
You know what?
Listen.
Mike, let me finish.
Hold
this.
Up, bro. No, man, because no, y'all just
all right, go ahead. Hurry up,
about
then, will you? For
I know
sake.
About
you talk more than I do.
I don't. No, I get muted. I don't even talk in more than 60 seconds. Let me tell you, I understand my history, bro, but you have to give all the facts. When they gave the NK Ultra control, when they brought the citizen, and I'm talking about the United States, right, what happened to the suspect that they tried to mind control? You know all about it. Tell me about it.
What suspect, Mike? Did you hear? See, the problem that you have is that you don't digest and listen to what people say, okay? Now, what I said was this, and I'm going to be real quick. Operation Paperclip brought all of the Nazis over here that know how perfected, and that they were spread all throughout American society from professors and teachers. So there's thousands and thousands upon thousands. That was in the 40s of people that know how to do Monarch programming. And you see it all over. You see it all over society, all over the globe. You would better believe some of those suicide bombers were groomed from birth to be suicide bombers, that a lot of them are under mind control. You would better believe
so
if the government says that they stop it, it's a ball that won't stop rolling.
Okay, well, first of all, we are often trying to control each other's minds when we have a dialogue and conversation. People try
not
to
at all, Mike, but let's see if you can comment now and keep in mind what I said.
Listen. Hold up. When you're talking about, see, you're giving two events. MK Ultra Mind Control, that was a whole nother experiment. But then you're going back into the 40s, right? And then you're leading up. I'm saying that those events are happening now, stuff like brainwashing, electric execution, all that type of shit, and people involuntarily going to this experiment, right? That's what I'm saying. But the oldest psychological brainwashing can be religion, ideologies, right? Someone
who's
fucking to the left side already.
Right.
You're saying that it ought that stop because the government told you that it stopped. Is that your fucking?
No, I never said that. No, I said involuntary experiments where the patient or the suspect doesn't.
So you're saying
that
doesn't happen.
That's what I'm saying. Prove that to me.
MK Ultra training starts with 1 and 2 year olds. That starts with 2 year olds.
Prove it to American government.
I told you about it, Mike. Where the fuck were you when I was telling you about it?
When? Now, give me a case now.
About 5 minutes ago, and I told you, veterans have come back from Iraq and Afghanistan. They've talked about having gone to the infirmary, the nurse, the doctor, the hospital, and they've gone there for one particular thing, and they've come out half crazy, suspecting that the fucking doctors have experimented on them.
Oh, my goodness.
So
they
were you
probably
when I said
going
it.
Before they went to the doctor. Hold on. If I go
well,
to
now
a
you got
doctor,
something else to fuck
I'm not saying that. Look, to each his own.
Don't you
for
think
every
it's possible
soldier,
that
I would
it's
never
true,
speak.
Though?
Hold up. No, listen to me. Listen
you think
to
it's
me.
Possible that it's true?
Oh, my, listen to me. Listen to
Do you
me.
Think it's possible that it's true?
Listen to me, bro. Listen to me.
You just answer this. Do you think it's possible that it's true?
No, listen to me, bro.
Do you think it's possible that it's true?
He said, listen to me. Give me the evidence.
And just say, do you think it's possible that it's true? Then you can continue with whatever you're going to say.
Give me the evidence that someone, when that soldier came into the hospital,
look it up on motherfucking Google. What the fuck? You're in IT. Look up fucking veterans, Afghanistan, Iraq. Look it up.
Okay, if they have proof that a doctor is doing this, give me the doctor's names and we should arrest
him. Wait
a minute,
wait.
God, Mike, you know what? You think it's possible that it's true?
We have the proof of the NK Ultra. We have Senate hearings on the NK Ultra.
Okay, so what you're saying,
Mike,
you don't even know what you're saying, is that
I do know what
I'm saying. No, you don't. Because you're saying, show me proof, show me proof. So by that, what you're saying is MK Ultra exists.
You're not letting me
admit to, but. To let you finish means the fucking world will fucking blow up.
No.
Fuck yeah,
everyone listen. I
don't want to listen to you right now.
I said voluntary and involuntary.
MK Ultra, you admitted to had
it already existed. You're
saying that it doesn't exist anymore. Show you proof.
Voluntary and involuntary, you dumb fuck.
Do you
listen to what I'm
going to
do to my distinction, you dumb fuck.
That this kind of shit can exist.
Voluntary and
involuntary, you dumb fuck. Stop. Shut up. Now, look, it's like this, man. All right? I'm putting into it. And then we're going to move on to something else. What time is it? Okay, look, it's like this. Michael, now I don't need you to respond. Just listen. You know, I haven't muted you, but you know I will, all right? Now, here it is. Yes, there have been reports of soldiers going in on sick call for one thing and coming out totally with totally different stuff, you know, that they had no clue was wrong with them when, that was wrong with them when they went in. You know, they are documented things. As far as the government telling you that, what they're experimenting on you, heck no, they ain't going to tell you. I remember when I was in the Gulf War, they gave me some pills. They gave us all some pills. And they said, here, take these pills, but you can't tell anybody that you took them. What you think that is, Michael?
I'm done with this show, man. Yo, man, you're not going to ask me a question. Let me defend myself, because I've been in it too.
No, that's all right. Anyway, and I'm saying,
why are you going to do him like that? He's going to be furious there on the other end.
What the hell?
Oh, well.
He's going to be writing something
up in the chat room. What I'm saying, Michael, is, you know, as far as MK Ultra, don't think they don't change the name or stuff. You know, once one thing is put out there and it's discovered, they just change the name. That's all they do.
If
programs continue, they just change the names. So
if you look at the movie, if you look at the movie, what is it, Deep Zero something? The one where it shows them with the people that they have in captivity trying to get information of them, Zero Dark 30, they are using mind-control techniques. They're using mind-control techniques that are effective. I don't know if it gets people to get real information, but they're showing you mind-control techniques. MK Ultra really starts from birth. Other things are mind-control things. So MK Ultra, there's no two-year-old, that volunteers to get raped, beaten and burnt by cigarettes and everything else to have trauma to create disassociative disorder, identity disorder. And that's what happens.
That's right.
With other mind control type of things is different. And they show you in Zero Dark 30. And of course that stuff exists today. And of course the government and the military does it. They pulled out all types of extreme measures in under the guise of fighting terrorism. They're going to do anything that works.
There you go. And they will continue to do
it.
But listen, right, bro. I'm talking about voluntary invite. There ain't nobody in no army ain't tell me that what they about to give me, what it was for, and tell me don't take nothing, but I ain't going to tell you. That's some bullshit. If somebody ever do shit like that, they crazy as fuck.
Hey, stupid.
Get the fuck out of here, Mr.
Here's
Talk.
A fucking page.
You dumb
you
as
said
fuck.
You wanted proof. I got a fucking web page for you, dumb fucking shit. You ready? Are you ready? I got a web page for you. It's on the government site. It's on the government site. Do you want to listen or do you want to continue rapping your mouth?
I'm government document, dumb fuck.
Dumb fuck. Here, you ready?
Come on.
Look, you know what?
Here's the fucking... You ready for the page?
Mike, Lord still there?
I can't believe that.
All right. And Mike must be listening. I'll mention it anyway. It's a fucking transcript of a testimony by Claudia J. Baharik at Congress. Hearing on 10-10-2013, between peril and promise, facing the dangers of VA skyrocketing use of prescription painkillers to treat veterans, okay? So they're skyrocketing that in order to experiment, in my opinion, on fucking veterans.
Oh my God, this is crazy.
Although the VA
can
demonstrate they have guidelines and resources for the prescription of narcotics.
He's talking about painkillers, yo. Oxycontin. Yo, what the fuck is you talking about, boy? I'm a fucking veteran, nigga. Yo.
And then also on the page, it says use of these potent, addictive, and potentially lethal medications. The problem with narcotics is but the tip of the iceberg, and the VA, the Titanic, had at full speed ahead for catastrophe. To quote a fellow physician, even a garbage dump looks good when you're flying 50,000 feet. You want the fucking page, or do you want to always just be
no,
fucking right?
No, every time you get a
do you want
from
the page,
VA,
or do you want to just flap
every, no, I don't, because I'm
you
a fucking fucking dumb bitch.
All right.
Every time you get a medication
you are
from
a
fucking page,
wow.
They give you
a lot
of side effects.
Why
you
guys
all right
talking to each other
the fucking thing. You can Google your medication on the fucking internet, bitch. What the fuck you talking
why
about?
Why is he calling
it's
them names like that?
Michael,
why are you calling them names like that? You guys are disagreeing on something, and you call him. I don't think that's
any. That's not appropriate, Mike.
Why do you got to call him a bitch, though, for disagreeing with something? Why has he got to be a dumb bitch? Okay. Good grief. took your medication before you came on. He only called you a name after you called him a name. He's just disagreeing with you. You know, a mind is like a parachute. If it ain't open, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
If you're going to discount the power of something like Oxycontin, these are opiates. These are heroin. Basically, it's heroin in a pill. And if you don't think that you can't manipulate, you could turn somebody into anything you want using powerful drugs like that. Look, I mean, good grief. I don't know why he lost it like that. You know what? You know what? And he's listening. You know something? It's like he wants to argue his point and be right so much that he doesn't really ever take a step back and examine if it's possible for him to process what someone else is saying. You can learn something that way.
When you trust the government as much as Michael does, anything you say against it, he's not going to comprehend.
He says over and over again, because I've been conned. Yeah, because you be trusting what people be telling you. People blow smoke up your ass. You know, I pride myself on being conned very, very, very few times in my life. I don't believe nothing no one says, even if I want to, you know, or what people do. And I have to be careful and do business with folks all the time. So, you know, I have not been conned. You have to have some discernment.
Yeah.
And I got another page from Mike. It's about vets themselves talking about secret drug experiments. Now, it goes back to the Cold War, leading up to after the Cold War, but they have a lawsuit that you can read, Michael, so it's out there in the public domain, and if anybody else who wants to, the chat room's closed down, if anybody wants to read this, it's what's it called, Feel Abandoned After Secret Drug Experiments.
I got a schizophrenic cousin who's about 6'4 and 200-something pounds that had a nervous breakdown in boot camp, okay, and went AWOL. And he came back talking so crazy, and I don't know if he was on, I think it was a combination, the worst combination of all, when somebody has organic mental illness and they're using strong drugs, you know? I mean, you got a real problem on your hands. And they didn't want to hear that crazy shit his big ass was talking about. So they loaded him up with Thorazine and Haldol and just put him in a zombie state. This was in the 70s, and there was
and
big abuse of that.
Yeah,
and then when they kick him out or he's discharged and he's already a basket case, you know, as far as really being functional, but they discharge him at a low percentage. He doesn't get full benefits. Okay, and I don't know that he actually deserves full benefits, but through
lawsuits and class action lawsuits, he eventually got raised up to full benefits after years, and he gets all of this back money. And it's not because he wasn't mentally ill and using drugs that he's part of the problem, but it's because of the way that they use to deal with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I guess the way they used to deal with it was just like, man, shoot him up for lithorazine and put his crazy ass on ice, you know?
And find out what happens to see if they can experiment. Yeah, if they can experiment further in the future.
It cooled this crazy. Who knows what he's been through and what they've been to him. But I can understand the mentality. It's like the doctor on the ward, like, man, listen, I got 15 batshit crazy people here on this ward. Why don't you just cool this big one out, man? Give him a double dose of this here, of this zombie potion. And they had him on Haldol for years. And Haldol was a real strong psychotic medicine, and it was affecting his neck and everything like that. But now I guess he's all right. So of course they do.
And they don't have to use the MK control experiments to make your mind become super receptive to fucking electronic waves. They can use anything to find out its effect on you, and then once they find out through testing it on hundreds and thousands of people who don't know what they're being used for, they can then come to a conclusion how to best use it, modify the drug in order to then try to get some kind of real mind control. It's all bullshit.
Yeah, that's true, but it is what it is. All right, y'all, it's 4:30, and I see rain cloud coming, and I'm not, I repeat, I am not going to lose any more equipment. So I'm going to let y'all go ahead and get your last words there. Let's see, last words. We're going to start with Stanley. You still there? We haven't heard from Stanley in a while. He backed out. Michael's backed him out. You there, Stanley? Okay, I guess
Stanley's
going to make
work. He must be listening on
speakers.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead, Joe. You up.
All right. You know what? It has been peaceful, relatively peaceful. It's like going back to the old days. I mean, even though we had some bullshit happen today, it's still relatively peaceful compared to when you first started out. So I happen to like it. The peace, the chaos, the kind of chaos of peace where we had, you know, but now, yeah.
Was kind of peaceful.
Me too.
It was kind of peaceful until he started calling you names, and then you responded. Then he took it a big higher. He used the B word.
He used that after I called him a dumb fuck, but I think he might have called
you a dumb fuck first. I would call it fair. There's no need for him to call you a dumb fuck first. You guys had a different way of looking at things.
Look, I look at it like this. We're in overtime, so.
Overtime isn't as bad. Your friends and family don't necessarily listen in overtime. I did have a conversation with someone one time that let me know that you've got other factors and forces pulling on you. I understand. Real good.
Okay.
Well, it was an interesting show.
Very.
It was an interesting
tomorrow
show.
Tomorrow
going to
be even better.
What's tomorrow?
Tomorrow going to be, is your government lying to you?
Oh, yeah, that means a whole 2 hours on that fucking topic. All right.
Well, every chance they get.
That's what politicians do. You know when a politician is lying? Of course. And their lips are moved
like a lawyer.
They're mostly
lawyers anyway. And lawyers are taught to make arguments regardless of how they feel and the truth. You know, your job is to make an argument, to make a compelling, persuasive argument.
The lawyer's a lousy salesman. Jesus.
You've got
trial lawyers like Johnny Cochran that are excellent salesmen, and then you got behind the scenes, you know, paper pushers and deal makers.
Well, yeah,
so.
But they're not the sales. They're not the ones who are the barristers around
all right,
to try to influence.
Gentlemen, no. we're not doing the show right now, okay?
We're not.
No, tomorrow. All right. But I do appreciate y'all. Do appreciate you being here, and I'm definitely looking forward to the show tomorrow.
I guarantee. My last words are going to mimic Mike when he comes in tomorrow. Mr. Talk, you muted me 8 times yesterday. Opening words. Okay.
No.
I didn't even get a chance to talk to the... You cut me off. You cut me off. I always get cut off. I mean, I'm tired of this show, man. I'm tired of this shit. No. Mr. Toxie. You say people don't understand what I'm saying, what I'm thinking, what I'm talking.
See, I got to use that. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Now, that was funny. Oh, man. Okay, y'all. Once again, I want to say thank y'all for coming to the show. Everybody that was in the chat room, everybody listening on your different devices, it's been fun, man. I tell you, tomorrow's show is your government lying to you. So I know it's going to be another hot one. So if you want to leave any comments, EricLessTalk@gmail.com. So stop by my Facebook page, Let's Talk with Eric Jackson at Facebook.com. And that's about it. All right. Until tomorrow, 2 p.m. Central, 3 Eastern, 12 Pacific, 1 Mountain Time. Remember to keep smiling. Show appreciation. Forgive with an open heart, but make sure you're forgiving yourself first before you forgive anyone else. And the biggest and best thing, learn to laugh at yourself. If you can laugh at yourself, then there's not too much that's going to bother you. That's for sure. That's the way I rock anyway. So, until tomorrow, y'all. Y'all have a good one. It's been fun. Later. Uh-oh.
Bye-bye.